Now, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy.
What?
Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, how are you doing tonight? This is the Place to Be podcast, part two of our WrestleMania Listomania. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and straight out of Norwalk, CT, is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you doing this fine evening?
A pleasure as always, sir. And this is the first time in Place to Be podcast history that we're actually having a sequel.
Yes. We were... First half went a little bit longer than we expected, so we didn't want to jip people by, either cutting things short or being loopy, considering after the show I went and brushed my teeth with hand soap, not realizing it wasn't toothpaste, so.
That was awesome.
I thought maybe it was a good time to cut it off. So we're going to finish up what we had planned tonight, and that is some more lists regarding WrestleMania. So let's fire it up and get things started. What do you say?
Let's do it. And just for everyone...
Oh, well, I had to get this song at least once.
Okay. We'll be talking about that show and that match later on, of course.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Remember, we went through a stretch. What was it? We went through a stretch. Must have been while we were doing those reviews early 2001. I think we just wanted to bash our heads against the wall having to listen to that song over and over again.
I remember. I think we counted it when we watched it live. We actually... Me and my three roommates, we drove down from college just to watch it at my friend's house. It was about an hour ride, and because we wanted to see the show so badly. But I think we counted the number of times, and that they played it like 30 something times when you factor in heat and the show itself.
Yes, yeah, it was insane. I'm sure Fred and the guys must have loved the royalties from that because Vince must have paid a pretty hefty check. So.
I'm sure they did. And that was one of our favorite drunken picture poses on the weekends up at school. We'd have two people do the My Way stare and play the song and take a picture.
right before the Beirut matches?
Yes, or right before me and the great Chrisley Bird did the Stone Cold Triple H spit and beer guzzling in front of everyone like idiots with our shirts off. And then we'd chop each other. It was not a good time to be a drunken fool in college. The
oh, my God.
A lot of violence.
You went from the three stages of hell to the two-man power. And let me tell you something. I watched those... ACTVs, you and Mr. Burr were indeed the two-man power trip. So
well, things peaked senior year when we used to have matches randomly in our living room, and he decided to blade with a shaving razor one night, and he like had a small cut in his head.
You mean what, like a disposable?
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
What a moron! Jesus. All right, enough of our fun and frivolity. Let us. We'll begin tonight. We've got four lists tonight. Mm-hmm. Actually, three and a half-ish. We got a funny story about a list confusion. We mentioned it on our last podcast.
Yeah, people have been dying. We teased it last night, and now I'm just sitting here anxiously waiting.
Yes, we'll get to that one second. I got to fix my header here.
I zone out, just wake me up, because right now I'm watching a dream match, and that is a Twin Towers squash match from 1989. So.
Oh, that's tremendous. That is absolutely
like a dream for me. So
of course. We are now going to rank the... Intercontinental title matches in WrestleMania history. Now, this is a short list. There's only 18 of them because obviously we went through a stretch in the 2000s where the bookers could give two shits about the Intercontinental title. So between WrestleMania 18 and WrestleMania 25, there was not an Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania. So so the list is not as long as trust me, if this is way too short, wait till we get to the world title match list, which is ridiculously long.
Yeah, that makes up for it.
Yeah, that makes up for it.
So. Basically double.
Yeah, pretty much. Almost. Yeah, in essence, it is double.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to let you, we're just going to let you go first for all of them, and then we'll bounce mine because you didn't number yours. And we apologize if you've already listened to the first part. The venues list got a little convoluted.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
Yeah.
So, but I blame myself for not numbering these things.
We make it up, though. We got solid lists for you tonight. A lot of good debate and fun. Now, don't forget, Place to Be Podcast Facebook page. You can go on to our board, Bigelow34ProBoards.com. You can email us, placetobepodcast@gmail.com. There's no excuse. Endless supplies of places to put in your feedback. You could tell us our lists are stupid. You could say Justin's picks are great and mine are bad, vice versa. You could say you agree, disagree. This is why we're here. The big show coming up this Sunday at the Georgia Dome, and this is why we're here.
Best time of the year. We do have a lot of feedback we're finally going to get to at the end of the show. Okay. I have it all written up here. And right. Also, we have a few people posted their WrestleMania 27 picks on the Facebook page. So if anyone hasn't yet and they want to get in on it, they can do it on the board or on the Facebook page. We'll kind of merge them. We'll count them as both.
Exactly.
So, and it's just facebook.com/placetobepodcast. So easy link for you. Yep. You know, get on there, hit us with your feedback. So
exactly. And by the end of this podcast, hopefully you're not putting dish soap on your tater tots. All right.
Yes, hopefully not. That was kind of gross. That woke me up. That's for sure.
Yeah. Let's keep you. All right. All right. So let's, here we go. Justin and I are about to rank the 18 intercontinental title matches in WrestleMania history.
Okay.
So go ahead.
No surprise here. What my number 18 is. The scorn, the scourge of my reviews. I cannot stand this match. And that is Savage Steel at WrestleMania 2.
Yeah, I agree. The match is horrible.
It's awful. It's just so boring. I hate all the stalling. Matt Riddle is the only person I've ever heard defend this match. I know, you know, it's blasphemy to hate on Savage, and he'll have such an immaculate WrestleMania career after this one. But I just was never a Steel fan, and the angle was good. They should have just done Savage and Santana here, though.
I agree. I think the problem here was, and we've said this before on past radio shows, my radio show, and just in discussions, our little round tables at your house, Savage still was kind of in that Memphis mode where, you know, his backbone of jacking a crowd up was to just walk around and be a chicken shit and yap and yap and yap. And then you have George Steele, who's supposed to act like a moron, and just those two things just didn't fit.
Right.
And on top of the fact that entire Nassau Coliseum portion of the show is hideous, and I can understand your hatred of it. I'll be honest with you, even at 12 years old watching it at the New Haven Coliseum on closed circuit, I didn't like the match either. So it's just not very good. And I agree with you. I mean, Tito had just lost the title.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 months before.
Yeah, exactly. A month and a
half.
Not
even 2 months. And I don't even know if Tito even got a rematch. So
I'm sure they worked the house show circuit, but not, I don't know if he ever got like a TV or Saturday Night Main Event one.
Yeah. You could have easily flip-flopped the two spots. Easily put George Steele with JYD.
You could have just had Steele in Tito's corner, even, you know, if you wanted to continue that storyline.
Yeah, and you could have put somebody else with JYD against the Funks. I mean, there were a crap load of babyfaces floating around aimlessly.
Could have taken someone out of the Battle Royal and put him in.
Exactly. I mean, you could even have made something cool like Bruno or something. Just some kind of something, anything. Instead of
heck, you could have even done Bruno Savage here because they were kind of having that little house show spat, you know, throughout 86 as well.
Yeah. Actually, there's a great piece, I don't remember which DVD it is, where Bruno's in the middle of an interview and he just absolutely snaps and he like smacks Savage in the face with a mic and they start brawling in I think it was at Boston Garden. This was just slapped together. They thought having the gentle giant, you know, fawning for beautiful Elizabeth and Savage being the, you know, dickhead boyfriend. The storyline was fine, but anybody should have known that the match was not going
to be executed. To me, it's sad that it's actually ranked last over what I have next, number 17, and that is Rey Mysterio and JBL, because that match is, you know, like 9 seconds, but I still would prefer that over the lengthy Savage Steel, which I just can't stand. But JBL Mysterio was JBL's final match. He wanted to put Rey over. You know, they're good friends. Rey won the IC title there from JBL at that show. And I think JBL actually, did he have one more? No, was that it, right? He quit that night, I think, in the ring.
Yeah, so he did. Yeah, he quit that night. Yep.
Yeah, so that's what I have as number 17.
I actually have that match just a slight skosh higher, probably more for storyline purposes. The match I have next, and you probably, I don't know how much higher you have this, but I have Rocky against the Sultan from WrestleMania 13.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that great. Rock, excuse me, Rock just wasn't quite in that mode yet. Obviously, he was thrust into the spotlight because Shawn lost his smile on that Raw, so they had to have a title change. So Rock beat Triple H. The Sultan was, you know, essentially it was Rikishi with a mask on. And essence, the Iron Sheik and Bob Backlund really made the – and Rocky Johnson made the match for me. The personalities made the match more than the match itself. Right. Not very good match. Not a very and another piece of a disappointing WrestleMania. So I have that at 17.
Okay. So moving on to the number 16. I have from WrestleMania 1, that's JYD and Greg Valentine.
That's what I have too.
Okay, good. So yeah, we could both talk about this one now. And it was, you know, okay stuff, but I don't know. This is another situation where I think Tito should have been used for the IC title match, really, because him and Valentine still kind of had a thing going. And, you know, the match is kind of the way, you know, Valentine cheats to win, and then Tito comes out anyway and somehow convinces the ref that Valentine cheated, which I've never seen ever. And the ref believes him and restarts the match, and Valentine gets countered out. It's just, you know, just kind of there. It's kind of bland.
Yeah, I actually like the storyline part of it with the, you know, when you're a kid, you're excited that Greg Valentine, you know, the evil villain, his ruse did not pay off. But yeah, again, just 2 weeks before, because it's on the 80s DVD, Valentine and Tito had an awesome lumberjack match at the Garden.
Right.
And it was a crazy, a lot of heat. So it just made zero sense. Unless, of course, they weren't expecting the title to change and they just wanted JYD on the show. I don't know. But again, Tito kind of got stiffed out of a title match, although he obviously got the payday anyway. But yeah, if you're looking for logic here, it made no sense to have these two wrestle. And the match is kind of crappy, but crowd's hot. It's the Garden. They get hot for anything if it's got decent personalities in it. But yeah, I mean, again, a case where Tito probably could have fit here for more logic. It's kind of hard, even for nostalgic purposes, to have this match much higher.
I agree.
So.
All right. So that is number 16. So moving on to number 15. Now, this is where I have Rocky and Sultan. You know, for same reasons you kind of mentioned, just a weird, weird IC title match. And, you know, it was always panned as like the worst because Sultan was involved. You know, Sultan wasn't a bad heel when he first debuted. But by this point, his heat was kind of gone. You know, the highlight of him was really Backlund's mic work. And if you watch him on Raws from late 96, Backlund was freaking hilarious on commentary. And him and Sheik together was kind of the novelty. It was fine, you know, typical. It was kind of just like an 80s feud, really. Typical weird monster heel taking on the you know, pretty boy face.
Right.
And the whole angle going in was Tony Atlas had been sitting at ringside every week on Raw, kind of kept saving Rocky. And then, you know, here he just sits in the crowd and Rocky Johnson makes a save. And I think they were actually maybe planning on bringing Atlas in for a feud or something like that, but they ended up doing it. Nothing, you know, just a basic title defense. So nothing special.
No, my I have for my number 15 match, Honky Tonk Man and Brutus Beefcake from WrestleMania 4. Again, you know, nothing really spectacular. Beefcake had not quite hit that stride yet. He'd hit it like a year later, tied the end of 88, beginning of 89. And this match is kind of sloppy. It ends in a DQ like almost all of Honky's matches did, and or count out. And, you know, there's obviously plenty more Intercontinental title matches that belong higher than this. But
and I'll actually discuss this one, too, because that's what I have next.
Okay.
Was Beefcake Honky. And, yeah, same reasons you, just kind of there, especially on such a bloated card like WrestleMania 4. It was just basically to have that title defended on the show. Really didn't fit. You know, Beefcake was a pretty good challenger at that point, but he was still kind of doing the weird barber crazed like look. He had like the big bug eyes and everything, and he was kind of a little odd. The highlight, of course, is when he chased Jimmy Hart around after the match, and I think he ended up cutting his hair a little bit. So yeah, but nothing too special. I think really, I mean, Beefcake, they could have beaten him here without a problem, and not had him really get hurt by it. I think Honky probably should have finally gotten some kind of clean win.
Yeah, I don't think he had many during that stretch. So that's your number 14 match.
Mm-hmm.
My number 14 match is the four-way from WrestleMania 15, Road Dogg, Val Venus, Goldust, and Shamrock. It's just like the hardcore match from earlier in the night. It's just kind of a sloppy mess. Typical Vince Russo match, just a bunch of guys running around. All right, I'm bored. Just end it now. You know, it's just not good. And again, the lack of logic of having Road Dogg, who was the hardcore guy, and Billy Gunn, who was the, you know, clean, good-looking mid-card IC guy, and then have them win each other's belts was just stupid.
Yeah, it was odd.
So, and this actually, match just shows that.
And once again, I can talk about this one with you as well, because that's what I had next.
Okay.
13.
Very good.
Was that one as well. And yeah, they had that kind of weird triangle thing going on with Ryan Shamrock, where she was with, you know, her brother at first, and then she was with Val, and then Val got rid of her, and she was with Goldust, and Blue Mini was with Goldust, and, you know, Goldust was just kind of in a weird spot at this point, really coming towards an end of his run. You know, he was synonymous with that belt for a while, really, but by this point, he was just kind of on his last legs. In a way, though, I kind of liked that little group he had with Meanie and Ryan. It was weird, but it was kind of funny. Yeah, Road Dogg didn't really fit. You know, Billy had been in the feud with Shamrock and Venus since, like, January, so it would have made sense to have him in the match. I still don't really get why they did it other than the shock value, so.
Yeah, and on a side note, I forgot when you mentioned Ryan Shamrock, again, Russo and Vince and their perverted minds. I think then they want, like, some kind of incest thing with Ken Shamrock getting jealous and wanting to go out with his sister or some weird
It was supposed to be something like that he really wanted to go out with her. And then was it here or Valentine's Day Massacre? I think it was Massacre when he said slap me like loudly and she
hit him. It was a massacre. It was a massacre because it was him against him against
Val
and Billy was the ref.
Yes,
that match was and he says slap me like really loud.
This match was nothing special. Then I think it was coming out to Road Dogg and Goldust, I think. Shamrock and Venus, so they get DQ'd or
it was Road Dogg. Yeah, it was Road Dogg and Goldust, and then Blue Meanie like accidentally
trips him,
thinking it was like that reverse, kind of like the In Your House 2 thing with Sean and Jarrett. Like he wasn't looking, so he tripped.
I always hated that spot. That and it kind of goes hand in hand when I WrestleMania 3 of you and I shit on that whole stupid the way Adrian Adonis accidentally cut Beefcake's hair. Like, how do you not know?
I just
always hated that like blind trip thing with looking the other way. I mean, it's good timing, I guess. It's impressive on that level, but
yeah,
I just always thought it was kind of hokey.
But that's how that match ended, and then Road Dogg kept the belt.
Okay, so what is your number 13?
My number 13 is a match you mentioned earlier, JBL and Rey Mysterio from 25. I know it's short, but I don't know. It kind of has a historical precedent. You knew this was it for JBL, and you know Rey had kind of gone back and forth ever since winning the world title at 22. So, you know, it's kind of a nice win for him. And I know it was kind of short and chintzy, but I don't know.
That was at 25, right? Had Rey? He had missed the previous two Manias, didn't he?
He was not at 23.
I think he was hurt for both of them.
Yeah, I don't think he was. No, he wasn't at 24. Yeah, this was his first Mania match. Since winning at 22, the world title.
So yeah, he goes. He was hurt both years.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often that you have a guy went back to back. Well, I guess Cena did at 20 and 21, but Ray did it too, 22 and 25. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was kind of nice to see him back on the spotlight. I know the match is crap, but this is kind of one where I like the little historical value of it being like JBL swan song, and then he ends up coming back anyway. But no, he doesn't actually. Yeah, that's it for him.
Yeah,
I keep thinking about the Shawn thing, but that was earlier in the year.
And there was no commentary either. That was. He was done at that point. He didn't come back to a comment. I mean, that was really, until recently, that was pretty much his last appearance.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah, I know it's not a great match, but I don't know. The historical perspective is always, I always had a soft spot for.
All right, so we are evened up here through 13 then. We have all the same matches so far.
Yeah, just in various orders. So okay, I'm curious to see where we go from here.
All right. And just to let you know, this show I'm watching, this primetime, is like my dream come true. Now that's a Coco Beware Boris Zukov match, so it's... A Twin Tower squash and now a Coco match. So, and
where the hell
might win. One he may win.
I don't know where the hell they got the filler for these matches, for these shows. So bad.
All right. So moving on, number 12. Yep. I have a match I really wanted to like more, but then when you look at the ones above it, I can't really justify moving it any higher. But it was such a good feud. But they just kind of booked themselves into a corner, and that's Mr. Perfect and Big Boss Man from WrestleMania 7. You know, the feud is really hot coming in with, you know, Boss Man coming off the Rude stuff, you know, insulting his mom. And then he went on the tear, beat Haku, beat Barbarian. And then it was lined up finally to go after Mr. Perfect. And obviously the story should have been him winning the IC title and finally vanquishing the family. But they couldn't do it because they had other plans for where, you know, Perfect needed some stability anyway. He had just done the same thing with Tornado late in 1990. So he kind of needed to hold that title to add a little credence to it. Going through the summer. So I get why they did it. It just kind of sucks that Bossman didn't really get that. You know, maybe they should have not even put the title on the line. Maybe they should have just had it like be a stipulation grudge match, like Bossman saying, I don't even care about the belt. I just want to, you know, defeat your whole family or something like that.
Or 5 minutes with Bobby.
Yeah, exactly. They could have done something like that too. But I mean, Andre ends up getting involved. You know, he clocks Perfect with the belt, and then Haku and Barbarian draw the DQ. So fun match. I mean, they worked hard. I always remember Perfect gave him a pretty nasty neck snap. That was one spot that always kind of stood out to me. So good stuff, just not better than, I think, the stuff above it.
Okay. I actually had this a little higher, maybe because of the feud. I have at number 12, Jeff Jarrett and Razor Ramon from WrestleMania 11. Another case where I really love the feud, and they actually had pretty good matches throughout that early part of 95.
Mm-hmm.
Kid was there, and I liked the match.
That one Kid had the pajamas on.
Yeah, that's when he had the pajamas. That's when he had the kitty robe on. Yeah. I'm kind of in the same pickle you are with the Boss Man Perfect. I had no problem putting that match a little higher just for the entertainment purposes. This match, I wanted to, but maybe it's that whole thing with that show. I just couldn't put it higher than the ones I have higher than. It's the best of the dozen, I guess you could say. That's a match I could actually put in and watch a few times. Razor obviously was clicking by in 95.
Yeah, he was. And Jarrett
was. Yeah, and Jarrett was a great character. It was really a good match. Just not as good as the 11 above it.
Right.
But a good match though. So I have that at 12.
And I can talk about that as well because I have it at 11.
there you go. Nice.
Yeah, solid match. Like I said, I think I tend to romanticize 95 maybe more than most people, and I did always enjoy that feud. They had a good feud. They went all the way from the Rumble into the Summer. You know, trading the belt back and forth, you know, Rhodey was involved here and everything. So it was a nice, clean IC title match. You know, not a lot of shenanigans, not a lot of hoopla. Razor gets the win clean, I think, right? No, actually, it was a DQ. Again?
No, it was a DQ.
That's
yeah,
right.
It was a DQ.
So, all right, it was still, fairly clean until that point.
Right.
And then Razor would get the last, revenge the next month in the handicap match. But yeah, just like you said, just a good match. You know, nothing great, but solid.
Right. I have at number 11, a match that strictly they've probably had better during their run. They had a feud in terms of length similar to Jarrett and Razor. So I have at number 11, The Rock against Ken Shamrock from WrestleMania 14. The feuds were almost similar. They start in January and end, you know, by like July. This one's good because Rock was just so crazy over as in both ways. You had people cheering him and people hating him. Shamrock was just he could beat The Rock in any other conceivable type of match, except when the title was on the line. He had the match, he had the belt won at the Rumble, and then they made him into a dumb meathead, and he got DQ'd. Then he won his team's title, the tag at No Way Out.
Mm-hmm.
So here he gets another shot, and he screws this one up, and it ends in a DQ, and he loses. And then he ends up winning a tag match against him in April, and then he beats him in the King of the, like, it's all this weird thing. Like, he could beat him in everything else, he just couldn't take the strap from him. And I think the match is entertaining. I love the visual at the end where Rock's holding the belt up as he's getting wheeled out in the stretcher. I always thought that
yes.
was a cool visual. Rock, you knew at that point that he finally figured it out, and that was the perfect start for him. So I like that match a lot. I have that match at number 11.
Well, you're not gonna believe this, but I got that match at number 10. so we can continue to talk about it.
Oh, nice.
We can continue to talk about these matches. Yeah, another good one. The build into the show, into this match, actually featured two of the nastiest. You wonder why Shamrock's a little tapped in the head, and I think this is one of the reasons why. Rock destroyed him with two straight chair shots to the face.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
building up to the show, and this one, Rock was really, really. You know, he was good in late '97 with the Steve feud, but he still kind of seemed like a guy maybe reaching above his head. In this feud in 98, to me, is when he solidified himself as like a major mid-card player.
Right.
And you're right. Yeah, Shamrock kept getting hosed. Rock kind of fucked with his head at the Rumble, did the brass knuckles and the tight thing. And then here again, you think Shamrock finally gets his win. It's a quick match, but it's really energetic. And then Shamrock snaps like you know, it actually was a nice like callback to all those times throughout 97 where he would, kind of snap and beat up all the refs after his matches, and it was really played well. Like, you believed that this is a guy who would, you know, do something stupid like this and cost himself the title because he couldn't control his anger. So it actually played nicely into the role he'd become in late 98, just kind of that psycho killer machine
right.
as a heel. So, you know, good stuff packed into about, I think it was only like 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, but still, you know, fun stuff. And like you said, the visual Rock leaving on the stretcher is tremendous.
Yeah. The good thing about this list is that we're coming up on matches we've already talked about, so we don't have to get into them a
right.
lot. And this is one of them. My number 10 match is Shawn Michaels and Tatanka from WrestleMania 9. I already talked enough about it in the previous podcast.
Yes. I
love it. It's a great opener. And this is where you and I slightly differ. I mean, we both agree about Shawn reaching this level. You gave him a little more credit at 8 than I did. I think his coming out match is this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little more high profile. He's got the title already. Tatanka was a great opponent. You know, of course, he thinks the match, his feud with Bigelow later in the year set the entire universe on fire, but
well,
that's okay.
Who can doubt him? Because he did say, you know, back in that website, he said he'd be back someday, and he did come back. So
he did come back. So,
and you know, what, you know, it always made me laugh. I was actually listening to our John Walters podcast again a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
And when he said that, it still shocked me when he says Tatanka was his favorite match.
I know.
And he really had a lot of praise for him. So, you know, maybe Tatanka's not as loopy as we all thought he was.
Yeah, maybe not. But, yeah, I mean, we don't have to get into this match a lot. We talked about it a lot in the last podcast. I like it a lot. It's probably the only match I really, really like off that show, and definitely deserves being the top 10 of Mania IC title matches.
Well, stop the presses, because I have it at number 9.
Oh, my God. This is tremendous.
It's good that we're getting these things, you know, we can talk about it at the same time. So
it's all about expediency here, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, we said everything we need to say. I don't think we need to talk about it again.
No.
So.
My number 9 is a match you mentioned earlier that you felt you couldn't rank higher, and I did because I thought the feud kind of gives it that bump, and that's Boss Man and Perfect from 7. It is a great feud. I guess the ending may take away from it a little bit for me, but it's still one of the best IC title matches, strictly based on storyline. And it's Bobby, and this is Bobby's swan song. So you get that as a manager. Obviously, he was around for a couple more years. Just I don't want to confuse anybody. It was a swan song as a manager. He was pretty much done within the next month.
Yeah, he was on till like June or July, I think.
Yeah,
that shit was already probably in the can for a while.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He started selling his guys off to other guys, to other managers. So, but yeah, I'm gonna let the feud be good enough to warrant being a little bit higher on the list. So I have it at number 9.
All right, so let's move on to number 8, and this is another match we talked about, and that is Chris Jericho and William Regal. I know you love this match; you probably have it much higher, but just a stiff war. Good opener to 17. Great show. Great start to the show. So definitely worthy to me of a top 10 spot.
Yeah. I actually only have it one notch above.
Okay.
I have it number 8. I have the following year's match, which I waxed nostalgic about on the last podcast as well. And that's RVD and William Regal from WrestleMania 18. A tremendous match. Outstanding. I may have these matches flip-flopped on my openers list.
Did you? I thought you had it this way.
Did I have it this? Oh, no, I have to look.
Because I think you had Jericho, like, really, you had it, like, number 2 or 3, I think.
Let's see. Openers.
I think you had it 2.
I had Jericho Regal 3 and RVD Regal 2. Oh,
okay, so you did have flips. All right, so explain yourself.
But for IC title matches, they're about the same. It's like 7 and 7A. I think I did my IC title matches first, and then I thought a little differently about the openers. But I could put these two, we'll make it easy. I'll make these two 8 and 7, roughly the same. And right. I give Regal the credit because, you know, it was good for him to finally get two solid title matches. Again, the one at 17 you just mentioned, Jericho and him stiffed the shit out of each other. And I think Regal really gave RVD carte blanche at that match at 18 to do what he wanted and really show himself off. And I think he did that. So I have that at 8. I have RVD Regal at 8, and I have Jericho Regal at 7.
And I have it flip-flopped. I have RVD Regal at 7. So just a match I thought was just slightly better. Because I think, that, I don't know, Jericho Regal just seemed a little rushed to me. And like I said, the ending just comes out of nowhere. Like RVD Regal had a little bit more psychology in my eyes, and just some of those shots that RVD takes. Like I said, that one suplex where he just gets crunched on his neck was nasty. And RVD getting the win was kind of a bigger deal than Jericho because it was his first WrestleMania, his first championship. Jericho was, you know, had the title coming in, so I kind of always, you know, may side with the title change if the matches are close enough. So all right, so we got that done. So now we have the top 6 here. And for my number 6 is from WrestleMania 2000, and that is Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, and Chris Jericho in the 2 out of 3 European Intercontinental title match. So
that's what I have that at number 6 as well.
Okay, yeah, good match. So these guys busted their ass. You know, I think it's one of those ones where maybe because the show is a little disappointing, you know, the show, this match itself gets a little overlooked, but it was easily, you know, second best match on that show after the ladder match.
Right.
You know, just 3 of the best at that point, just really going out there and letting it rip. And, you know, Jericho, I recently watched his DVD, and, you know, he kind of talks about where he was mentally at this point. And it seems like he didn't really get in his groove until a few weeks later when he had the Phantom title change with Triple H. So I think at this point, he still really wasn't comfortable, you know, with what he was doing.
Right.
So maybe this match would have been better if it actually happened a few months after this. And Angle was still kind of, you know, a little new as well, even though he was tremendous out of the gate. So I think this is a match that maybe, you know, it's hard to crap on it because it's so good, but I think they have the potential to be even better than they were.
Well, the reason I like this match a lot, same reason that you do, because it was a crowning jewel of an otherwise flat show. And you're dealing with 3 studs, and obviously Benoit probably had the most experience, quote unquote, at that point. Obviously him and Jericho would have a kick-ass feud from pretty much here all the way to the 2001 Rumble, in essence, back and forth.
Yes.
The one thing I like about this match is because, to me, this shut the door on the Vince Russo mid-card. Gone were the schlocky, lazy, fat, bullshit mid-card junk where, yeah, the characters were fun and you got to giggle and everything, but the matches were absolute garbage. This is a Chris Kresge match. This is not a Vince Russo match. Three technicians who – what they pretty much did was, other than Angle, who was already there, this match pretty much told WCW, boy, did you really fuck this up, huh?
Yeah, because, pretty much. Because, it really was just rubbing it in.
Yeah, because, hello, if we can do this, why couldn't you? And you had these guys for like 4 years. So, to me, this is a I call this the fuck you to WCW match.
Well, you know what else was great, too, here was the psychology of it. You know, the whole thing where Backlund was kind of Angle's advisor at this point, and he ended up putting the two titles on the line without telling Angle, and Angle kind of freaked out, and of course then Angle goes and loses both without getting pinned. So he was able to play up the whole conspiracy thing, saying he got hosed. So, you know, that added to it as well, having that little bit of psychology mixed in.
Yeah. You know what would have been great? And I bet you if this was maybe 2 years later, when the company was really flying high, and, you know, Angle kept calling himself the Eurocontinental champion.
Yes.
I think it would have been great if he made his own Eurocontinental belt. I think that would have been very funny. Kind of morphing
cool.
The two belts together. I think it would have been hilarious. But, yeah, that's why I like this match, too, at number six, because it pretty much is a fuck you to WCW that, look, you had these guys for 3 years and you didn't want anyone to care about them. Well, we're going to care about them. Look what we've given you. So that's why I like that. It's a special significance for that one.
All right. So let's move on to the top five. Before we do, I just want to let everyone know Coco Beware did defeat Boris Zukov. So it's a banner night here.
There you go.
At the 196 All you need is a little, place to be nation home here.
Yes. And well, the only problem is we're about 2 years away from Big Bully Busick. So there won't be a Big Bully Busick match in this run. Bummer.
Yeah, pretty sad. I have been loving him on those superstars, though.
Yes.
Digging his promo skills. So, all right, top five. Now, to me, these are all pretty – well, maybe not this fifth one. The top four to me are all like 1A, B, C, and D. This one's, you know, slightly outside that ranking.
Okay.
So a friend of mine, number five, is from WrestleMania 5, and that is Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude. Really good match, actually. I mean, it is a great match. I think their SummerSlam 1 is a notch higher. SummerSlam 89, that is. But this one is really good, too. And this was another one kind of in the same vein as the Hearts and Nasty Boys, how we said it was like an upset. In retrospect, it seems obvious, but at the time, you know, you could see it kind of being an upset. A guy like Rude, who hadn't really ascended past, like, maybe lower to mid-card, comes out here. And the joy that Jesse Ventura has in commentary at Bobby finally winning a title, you know, really puts this one over. And, of course, Heenan helps him cheat to win. So, and Rude's bumping in this match is just insane. And Warrior, as we'll talk about in a little bit, was really always brought the heat on these WrestleMania matches. You know, that was one thing. He was a flake everywhere else, but at WrestleMania, he always delivered a good match. And that stays the same here.
Yeah. I actually, maybe it's because I love the feud so much, but I have that one notch up. I actually have it, my number five, and it's not by much. It really is not by much. I have Roddy Piper and Bret Hart from WrestleMania 8. Again, it's not that, obviously, it's not, for me, it's the storyline. And the Piper-Bret storyline was nice.
Let's do this. You have the next one, number four, Warrior Rude?
Yes.
All right, do your Warrior Rude comments, because then I have Piper Hart 4, so we'll talk about that.
All right, I love this feud. Love it. It's my favorite feud of 1989, even more than Hogan and Zeus. You got to give Rick Rude a lot of credit. He was dealing with a piece of meat.
Did you just say more than Hogan Zeus, seriously, or was that facetiously?
Both. Well, you know what? If it wasn't for Zeus, and I know we're going off the rails here, but we wouldn't have had that awesome Hogan Boss Man cage match. So
and we would have had
that.
The awesome Hulk Hogan. Beefcake
Barber with one eye going like behind his head. Yeah, not good.
And then he did a Sublime video.
Yeah. I'll just always love this feud. And, you know, Rick, again, Rude was handed just this big, good-looking piece of meat, and he really made it into a hell of a feud.
Yes.
And Rude was just one of the best heels of all time. He actually, if you've seen it, it's on the Netflix Instant if you don't have the DVD. He was picked as one of the 50 greatest superstars ever, and he deserves it. And this is one of the reasons why. He took a guy who has maybe four moves, which is about three less than Hogan, and gave him two top-line matches. Yes, the one at SummerSlam is head and shoulders. Not head and shoulders, but I have that as almost five stars.
Yeah,
this
one, that's an excellent match.
Yeah, this one I like a lot, and it's also sentimental because, like you said, it is Bobby's first title. And I think Jesse was truly happy for him, finally.
And Rude. I mean, he was, you know, Jesse has his guy, Savage being one of them, but Rude was the one guy he was on from the start to finish.
Yep, Jesse the Body Award.
Always loved Rick Rude, so, and he always hated the Warrior, so this was like his dream match right here.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So I have that at number four. Because I just for sentimental reasons, I love the match and just the storyline was great.
So Sammy, I'm sorry. Good.
No. I was gonna say, and again, Rude winning just capped it because it gave Bobby what he truly deserved. So
and then same for me, pretty much sentimental reasons. WrestleMania 8, first WrestleMania I saw live. Piper Hart was just, you know, you didn't know what to expect because Piper had been on, you know, he had commentated all throughout 1991, had his little feud with Ric Flair, but they never really had a blow off. You know, comes out of nowhere to win the title in a squash over the Mountie. So he hadn't really had a great match in a long time. Honestly, I don't know when he had it. You know, like,
I know.
1985? I mean, really, he hadn't really ever had a match like this on WWF TV. So it kind of comes out of nowhere. You know, and Brett was just, you know, just a machine at this point. You know, the storyline was Brett, you know, felt like he got screwed. Big surprise. But of the IC title from Mountie, he had to wrestle sick. That was the storyline. So he was looking for revenge. The pre-match promo that these two do with Mean Gene kind of stirring shit up, as always, was this great stuff where, you know, Piper talks about being in the Hart household when Brett was a little kid and, you know, his mom making bologna sandwiches. There was only one piece of bologna, though, you know, and he kept getting a little digs in. And then, you know, the match itself is just tremendous. Of course, there's the blood. This is one of the ones, right, where Brett kind of does the wink-wink. It was accidental, so Vince didn't get mad at him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the blood was nasty. Definitely a 5-alarm blade job at Bret Hart in this match. Mm. And then there's a great morality play, too, with Piper, you know, trying to decide whether to use the bell. And then, you know, the old Piper would have, but this Piper, you know, holds off. And then Bret, you know, he goes to the sleeper, and then Bret does the classic kick off the rope and rolls him up. And, you know, Piper, he had never really been pinned on WWF television before, I don't think. So this was really a big deal at the time to see Roddy Piper lay down. And really pass the torch to Bret Hart. And this is the first match in my eyes. You know, the Mr. Perfect win was a great one for Bret at SummerSlam. But this is the match that legitimized him, I think, as a legit player. That he could go out there and beat Piper at WrestleMania for the title.
I agree. And it might be Piper's best match in WWF history.
Without a doubt, yeah.
You know, he never had an opponent like this. That's what it was. See, Piper was always booked in the comedy, not comedy, but he's always booked in like the asshole comedy matches against good, you know, fodder heels. This is the first time he actually was facing a guy who, you know, give him the goods in the ring. And I think it was almost like, like you said, it was like Bret was taking a class in being an awesome solo babyface. And his midterm exam was beating Perfect at SummerSlam, and his final exam was beating Piper at WrestleMania.
Yes.
And once he beat Piper at WrestleMania, you knew that Bret was a legit stud for the rest of his career.
Yeah, because by the next show, you know, he's carrying Bulldog, you know, into a great match. So this was, exactly. really was his, you know, all right, let's see, can you go out there and with a guy that knows how to work but never had really put on this kind of match on the stage here, you know, and make it happen, and they did.
Right, exactly. So definitely a top five for us in Intercontinental title matches at Mania. Tremendous.
So now number three, you know, I felt bad. I'm sure I think you probably have this in the same spot, but I felt bad putting this on here because you never really think of this as an Intercontinental title match. And that is
right.
The Ultimate Challenge, Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan. Of course, all the focus is on the world title. But everyone forgets that both titles were on the line. So if Hogan won, he would have won the IC title, which is pretty funny to think of.
It is funny to think of.
It was kind of pointless, though. They really should have just vacated it even before the show because they basically said, you know, whoever wins can't hold both belts. And who the hell was going to vacate the world title? I mean, obviously, they were going to vacate the IC. So they should have probably just vacated it prior. But I guess the champion thing was really the draw. So,
right.
I mean, and it really actually added a lot of mystique to Ultimate Warrior because, you know, he had this IC title reign, beat Rude, and was rolling through everyone, and the only way he could lose it was to have it taken away from him. So, you know, we'll get into this match actually later, probably in more detail. So maybe we should just leave it here for now because it's more known as a world title match. So
exactly. I think we just have it up here because it is 5 stars and it is an Intercontinental title match, but it's obviously when we get to our list later, we'll get into more of the juice about that. But this match is placed here simply because it's 5 stars and it's for the Intercontinental title. But obviously the storyline and the backstory and everything really has nothing to do with that belt per se. So it's kind of by circumstance that it's number three.
And now here we will test our mettle. Do we have the same? I mean, obviously the two matches we knew would be at the top.
Yep.
Are they in the same order? My number two is Shawn Michaels' Razor Ramon ladder match from WrestleMania 10. I went back and forth quite a bit for number two and number one. But to me, number one in the end just ends up being more memorable. Number two was the template for so many matches that followed that would one-up it. I think the match we have number one was never really topped with that style. But the ladder match is an excellent match. And really, I feel like newer fans may look at it and be like, oh, what's so special? You know, I've seen 10 times worse stuff, you know, in future years. But that was so fresh and original at the time that it was just shocking to watch that live. And the stuff they were doing and the psychology behind it, they weren't just, you know, using the ladder to jump off of. They were using it as a weapon and picking their spots and just really working a lot of psychology into the match. And just great, great stuff. And then this was Sean's, you know, we talk about 8 and 9 being his breakout. This was his, you know, solidified, all right, Shawn Michaels is a fucking awesome wrestler. And this was really what, you know, was his first big time major great match.
Right. I think we all knew, at least in our circles, what my number one would be. So it really was just a question of whether you have it at number one as well. Yeah. I think you all knew what I think everyone who knows me knows what my number one would be. What I love about this match, besides the fact that Shawn solidified himself as Mr. WrestleMania and the Heartbreak Kid, you know, as much as right now he's become nothing but a caricature of himself and a fat, creepy drunk, you got to give Razor Ramon a lot of credit in this match. Because this is a guy who never gets any credit for being able to paint a good match. And I don't want to hear this click bullshit either, okay? All right, I'm tired of, you know, the qualifiers get irritating after a while. I know Justin and I put him in the review, and it has to be mentioned. But at the same time, the guy really deserves a lot of credit for going step for step, using the ladder to tell the story. And he took some stiff shots, much more than Shawn did. Razor took at least 4 more shots in the face than Shawn did.
I don't think Razor gets shit on as much as you're saying. I think it's more Nash that kind of gets the crap of saying, oh, if he wasn't with the Click guys, he couldn't work. But, I mean, Razor had a lot of great matches with a lot of different people from 93 to 95, I thought.
Well, I think once this match was established and then he would go on to face other guys like Jarrett and Dean Douglas and other guys. But I think here it's like, oh, you know, he fought IRS and come on, he fought Martel. And we didn't really see his strength as a solo wrestler throughout a lot of 93.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the match that, you know, when he fought IRS at the Rumble, and it was a good match.
I mean, his matches with Brett were good.
Excuse me. Yes, his matches with Brett were good. But again, I don't think obviously they weren't the focus. They didn't have to be the focus.
Right.
The Rumble was the focus at the Rumble, and then obviously at King of the Ring, it was just one of the tournament matches. But this was a chance, Razor on a big stage, to really show his mettle as a superstar. Mm-hmm. And I think he passed it in spades. And Shawn is Shawn. And he finally, after 93 and fucking off and almost getting fired and almost going to WCW and all this other stuff, this is the match where he realized, you know what? I need to create a legacy now because otherwise I'm going to be forgotten.
Right.
And that's why this match went off the way it did, because I think both guys needed to prove something, I think, to the WWF universe, I guess, if there was such a thing, and to the writers and the Meltzers and all these guys. And I think they both pulled it off like that. So I think that's why that match is so good, is because they both had something to prove in their own, you know, in their own specific ways, and they did that.
Yes. And that leads us to our obvious number one match, and that is from WrestleMania 3, the match that they went in trying to steal a show, and they ended up stealing the show. Yep. And that was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with George Steele in his corner against the Macho Man Randy Savage.
That's right.
With Miss Lizard. Of course, the build-up, we all know, was tremendous. They had these matches in 1986 on house shows. They were supposedly just as good as this one.
They're outstanding.
And it was all called, you know, the rumors that they would work in parts of this match into other matches to perfect it, you know, certain parts. You know, that we have a whole... everyone knows the angle. We just actually went over it in pretty good detail on our WrestleMania 3 review podcast, so we won't get into that as much. And but, you know, just pretty much a picture-perfect match. The first great WWF big-time, you know, pay-per-view match. Steamboat gets the win, feel good moment, all the near falls, all the nonstop action, just two guys going all out to deliver a gem, and they did.
Absolutely. And it was a perfect combination of two guys. Obviously the guy that had more to prove in this match was Savage, because as we talked about at the bottom, I mean, when have we had a case where a guy made the bottom of a list and the top of a list at the same time?
Yeah. Huh?
Well, so
and it wasn't totally, it had nothing to do with him.
No, really, it was just his opponents. you know, I think Savage realized by the time he got to that night, March 29th, 1987, that he had to be better than he was a year before. And I think he perfected it while he was champion throughout 86. But I tell you something, and you mentioned it, Justin, and it's on a few tapes. It's on a couple of DVDs. In fact, I think one of them is on Savage's DVD. These guys had house show matches that were off the charts. They have a match. I don't have time to riffle through my library. I'll have to find it. They have a match in late 85. I think it's at the Westchester County Civic Center, one of those places in the Northeast. And it's like 26 minutes, and it's got weapons and stuff. It's crazy. It's an absolute gem, and it's all over the place. And this is – and so it seemed like these two were destined to have a great match, the perfect match, and they did. The build is great. The match is great. The commentary is great. You know, and the crowd, it was just the perfect moment, the perfect setting, and the perfect match.
Yep.
And it took a long time for me to find a match that I can honestly say would go higher than this as the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. It took a long time, 22 years to be exact. And it's still, I'll always think of it fondly. It's the match that will always be the marker for me the first 7 years I was a wrestling fan. That's the template right there. The first match I ever watched that made me a wrestling fan was Snuka and Morocco in the cage in 1983, but this match solidified it.
I think you're confusing yourself with Mick Foley.
Well, I didn't hitchhike, so trust me, I didn't want to get on the highway. I was only 10, so. You know, that match is just perfect. It's the perfect match. There's really no flaw in it. I challenge anybody to find one. Okay. I know we have one friend who thinks the George Steele part of them, having George Steele there, ruins it, and you know that's you know, you could neither here nor there, but I challenge anybody to find something wrong with that match. There's just nothing wrong with it.
The only thing wrong is that it ends.
That's tremendous. I like that. Oh, that's awesome. Very right. Well done. I'm sure D-Ray would have found something good to put on the back end of that, but you
he usually does find something good for his back end. So
yeah,
let's move on to the a little brick away from our countdowns, and we're gonna do similarly as we did with the celebrities. We're gonna do the top 10 WrestleMania performers. And now here's the great story we've been talking about that was really, really funny. So
it was funny.
I since got the list of these categories, and I just put top 10 WrestleMania performers. And Scott, what did you think I meant?
I thought when you said top 10 performers, I thought you meant singers and celebrities that performed like the national anthem or sang a song or America the Beautiful. Like I thought you were talking about performances, like somebody who did something really great in terms of singing or the band or something like that at WrestleMania.
And obviously I clearly meant the top 10 wrestling wrestlers, you know, best performers that always brought it at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So as I listed my number one guy, you would have come back with Michelle Williams, WrestleMania 22.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And Ashanti. So.
That's right. So that was pretty, we had a good laugh. And it would have been pretty funny if we did go in blindly and just kind of start reading them off. Yeah. But
the only reason I thought that was because you put performers and celebrities kind of together on the list. So I thought that's what you meant. If you had said top 10 guys, I figured you would put it higher up in the list you wrote. That's why I did that. But why don't we do this? The top 10, you and I probably have roughly the same top 10 guys.
I'm sure.
So why don't we – I'll rip them off. I'll say that – I'll give names and tell me if you have them on your list.
Okay.
We'll go from there. All right. Hogan?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. the Executioner? No, I'm just kidding. Big Bully Music, didn't he have a cage match? No, never mind.
Yeah, I don't think he ever made it anywhere. I just want to qualify my list. I know Hogan was on a lot of shows, obviously, but I factored very heavily into match quality.
Okay.
And great moments mixed in with the match quality. So I just didn't think Hogan had a good enough resume as far as matches go.
Okay. So you really didn't have him on there?
No, I don't.
Oh, wow. I thought you were kidding.
No, I'm serious. Okay. I found 10 guys that I thought had just put on better overall Mania performances than him.
Okay. All right. Undertaker?
Yes, obviously. He's the only one that I put on there that I thought, you know, had a lot of stinkers, but had enough good ones to justify me. And you know, the dude's 18-0, and he's synonymous with WrestleMania now, more so than I think Hogan even at this point. So
a lot of his stinkers were really not his fault. I mean, what are you going to do with King Kong Bundy, really?
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. You know?
Taker, obviously Shawn.
Yes, Shawn. I didn't number them, but he'd be my number one.
Okay. Steve?
Yes.
Rock?
Yes.
Savage?
Yeah, he'd be my number two, actually.
Cena?
No. Do you have Cena on yours?
I had Cena on mine, yeah.
Okay.
Triple H?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, okay. I'm very touched. I'm touched.
No, I mean, you can't question. He has had, a bunch of good great matches, and, you know, he's another guy that's just kind of been synonymous with Mania. I guess me, if I had to bump anyone, it would probably be him, I guess, because he hasn't had as many great matches, but he's just been in so many, and, you know, been in so many memorable matches that it's hard to discount him. Okay. And I think his best matches are at least up there with Hogan's.
Okay. Brett?
Yes.
Okay, that's seven.
We have seven the same, or you've only done seven?
No, I've only done seven.
Okay.
What are your other three?
Well, who are yours? You're going first.
Well, I didn't. My list is just names. I have like a bunch. I didn't really number them down to ten. So,
all right. Well, my other three are Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. Now I know he's. You know, you compare him and Hogan. You say, well, Hogan was in whatever. You know. Maybe I should have put Hogan on here. I guess I really didn't fully think of him, but to me, Warrior just had three epic matches, all had great storylines, and the match with Savage just kind of put him over the top for me. But he's just someone who I just feel like he deserved to be recognized for always, a guy who gets shit on a lot. He always brought it when it came to Mania. You know, five with Rude, six with Hogan, seven with Savage. Those three matches are all iconic in their own way.
Yes.
So I thought he deserved to be on here. Okay. Another guy I have is Kurt Angle.
Okay, that makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, great match at 16, 17. You know, brought Kane to a good match at 18. Excellent match at 19. Excellent match at 20. Excellent match at 21. Really good match at 22, you know, before leaving. So, really, he never had, you know, a bad match at Mania.
No, he never did.
So, me, actually, probably him, maybe, like, top three, honestly. Mm. And then, lastly, this one may be a little controversial, but he really, I think, is kind of an underrated Mania performer, and that's Edge. You know, had two great TLC, you know, the ladder match, the TLC match. Had that one kind of lost match with Booker at 18, but, you know, then he missed a couple. But since then, you know, came back with another couple good Money in the Bank matches. Had an awesome match with Undertaker at WrestleMania 24. You know, decent enough match with Cena and Big Show. And then last year, a really good match with Jericho. So, you know, should I put Hogan in maybe over Warrior or Triple H? Possibly. But I'd argue to keep Edge and Angle on there.
Okay. All right. Well, now we'll do my exceptional list and tell me if you agree with them, what I put for the top 10 best singing performances. And we'll do this super fast.
Yeah.
No, I want to see if you agree with that. I want to see if you agree with that. And I want to see if the fans agree as well.
Are these in order now?
These are ranked 10 to 1.
All right.
Number 10, I have Salt and Pepper from WrestleMania 11.
Now, that'd be my number one, but go ahead.
Because I loved them singing. What a man, what a man, what a mighty good man.
Yes, and then working the LT stuff in there was good.
Yes.
And I like the way they were dancing. I always liked Salt and Pepper. I like the way they were dancing up in that little stage. And that's just part of that hoopla that I always say how much I like about that match.
Yeah. No, I like Salt and Pepper too, actually. Number nine, we just goofed on her, but I actually liked her performance, and that was Ashanti at WrestleMania 19. I thought she sang the national anthem very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight, I have Ice-T from WrestleMania 16.
Oh, no. I hated that.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was funny. I didn't
never like that. I liked that album, but that was one of the songs I didn't really like on that album. So I didn't really care for that.
Okay. Number seven, as much as I really don't like him, I did like his America the Beautiful. I think that's what he sang. And that was Willie Nelson at WrestleMania 7. Because he looks so funny. He looks so funny with the bandana and the little foam belt on. That was pretty funny. This one I have to qualify because these guys performed twice. My number six is Motorhead. Mm-hmm. I loved their performance at WrestleMania 17 when they sang for Triple H, but their WrestleMania 21 performance was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
There were five drooling morons. I had no idea what Lemmy was singing. I think he forgot the words halfway through.
I think so too.
So I don't qualify that one, but when they sang his theme at WrestleMania 17, it was awesome. Number five, and I know you like this one, and that's Reba McEntire at WrestleMania 8.
It's Reba McEntire, Tito Santana's sister.
A Reba.
According to Bobby.
That's good. I forgot about that. WrestleMania 8, I thought she did a nice job. Number 4, Gladys Knight from WrestleMania 4. That was very good. Number 3, and I know this is definitely one of your personal favorites, and that's Robert Goulet from WrestleMania 6.
Yes, Goulet was very good.
Tremendous job at number 2, Aretha Franklin, WrestleManias 3 and 23. And number 1, and they play this a lot on other pieces, and I think it's because Vince truly loved this performance, and it's my favorite singing performance ever, and it might be the best part of the whole show, and that's Ray Charles at WrestleMania 2.
Mm-hmm.
His America the Beautiful is awesome, absolutely awesome. And you know what? I would have given the show an A+ if it stopped right there.
Yeah.
If he just sang and then it ended, that would have been fine with me. And maybe the tag title match. That might have been it.
A couple you're missing, obviously, Rock and Robin. The worst ever. God. I think Gene was actually even better than her.
That's true, yes.
No, Little Richard was about at WrestleMania 10 with the boys' choir.
Yeah, no, Little Richard was very good. And that was funny that they brought the boys' choir back 10 years later. I thought that was very cool. That's true. Yep.
A little sad you didn't have Steve Allen on there. He did a little performance at the bathroom.
Well, I know you love that, but I don't really consider that a performance. I mean, to me, he's more a celebrity because, you know, Perestroika and something. Are You Tonight? I like that song. Yeah, you're right. I should have put him on there. I'll put him at number 11 under Salt and Pepper.
Not a huge fan of the band itself, but I thought Limp Bizkit doing Rollin' at 19 was pretty good.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I thought that they kind of – I had an issue with those Attitude-era band performances, a couple of them. Like, they had Drowning Pool, and they really – I really
– Yeah, 18 was Overload. I think it was Drowning Pool and Saliva both played, and that was a little much.
That was a little much. But, you know, this is a part of WrestleMania that, you know, that can never be forgotten. The singers and I don't even know who the heck is singing. Who's singing the national anthem this year?
Crap, they just announced it last night.
Yeah, I don't know who it is either.
One more I just wanted to say, and that's the DX band at 14. I thought like that they just added a lot to the flavor of that, you know, Attitude Era. That was like the you know, first Attitude Era WrestleMania. And the DX song was so ingrained with the promotion at that point, and to have them do it live, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. I like that one too. And it gave Sean, you know, considering it was like, you know, the rumored last match for Sean, obviously ever, which it didn't happen, but just being really grizzled and just that live raw feel, it fit the show. It fit the show.
Kerry Hilson, Grammy nominated, will be singing this year.
All right, good for her. I had no idea who she is. Then again, I didn't know who Ashanti was at the time either.
Trying to get Justin Bieber, but that fell through.
They did try to get the Bieber. And you know that would have led to some stupid skit with Santino. Probably would have been funny.
That would have been a pretty good get, actually, I think.
Yeah. The Bleeber. Who are you, Justin Bleeber? Looking forward to how he would have butchered his name. That would probably been pretty good. Okay, time to get down to business.
Well, before we move on, though, I do want to say I just got a message from our buddy Jordan Duncan.
Oh, okay.
You know, he was on a couple times with us. And, actually, one time. I don't know why I'm embellishing. It felt like two. He said that we should rank the greatest Mae Young moments.
How many were there?
I don't know. But I said they're all tied for number one, so.
Exactly. I don't want to hit there about her and Bobby rolling around in the closet at the Garden. That's the last thing I need to really remember. Okay, got to keep myself my throat going tonight. I apologize. If I cough in the mic, I apologize, folks. I'm beginning my lone cold of the year, at least getting out of the way now. Okay, now it's time to really dig in deep. We mentioned it in our first podcast, and now it's time – our first podcast earlier in the week, part one. We've counted a grand total of 34 – WWE or world title matches at WrestleMania. 35, if you count the one that we would both have last. Justin actually didn't bother putting it on his list. I actually have it on my list just out of spite.
Might as well say it right now. Good.
Yeah. I have it number 35, Hulk Hogan and Yokozuna from WrestleMania 9. It's despicable. It's disgusting. It ruined a great show, and it ruined an entire year of wrestling. Done. Leave it at that. So we ranked the 34. Now you're wondering how that number came about. Well, there's 26 WWE title matches. How does that work? Well, you had no match at 1, but 2 matches at 10. So it actually comes out to 30 to 26 WWE title matches. And 8 world heavyweight title matches, which of course started at WrestleMania 19 with Triple H and Booker T, and then there have been at least one ever since. So it does come out to 34 matches. And we ranked them all. We will try and be as expeditious as possible. This is a good case where hopefully we have some close together. But we shall see. This is a fascinating list. I'm looking forward to this one because Justin and I do have varying opinions on matches and eras. And this is a big one because a lot of these were the main event. A lot of these were the match that made you want to buy the show during that time. So this is a big deal because these are the anchors right now. These are the anchor matches. So,
and before we get going with that, here is Kerry Hilson's big song. I think it's on a lot on the radio, I think, now.
Yeah, I've heard it. I recognize the song. I've heard it a couple times.
So that's who's singing America the Beautiful.
Okay. All right. Well, look forward to that then on Sunday. She'll do a good job. Okay. Here we go. Again, I'll let you, since yours aren't numbered, I'll let you go first, and I'll kind of let you know what number you're on. Okay. So we will begin with number 34.
Okay, so to me, the worst non-Hogan-Yoko match is another Yoko match, and that is Lex Luger and Yokozuna at WrestleMania 10.
That's what I have as well.
Okay, just a boring, boring snooze fest. The only highlight was Mr. Perfect as the referee, and even that didn't happen, you know, add much to it. The crowd was chanting bullshit halfway through the match.
I forgot about that.
Their SummerSlam 93 match was actually pretty good. You know, they moved around pretty well. But here, I don't know if Yoko is just kind of conserving some energy for later or what. Or Luger was just going in the tank because he knew he wasn't winning. But I hate that match. And for a show that I love, I just really hate that match.
I hate that match, too. And if it wasn't for Perfect, it'd be... I might even rank Hogan and Yoko higher just for historical purposes.
At least
but
they were shorter.
Yeah, exactly. It's just terrible. And I agree with you. I think Luger's just a dick, and I think he threw it in the toilet, to be honest with you.
All right. And length I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, yeah, that's what I think. I think Luger – I agree with you. I think Luger just tanked it.
All right. And length is the main reason that I had this one above that one, and that is also from that same show, Bret Hart and Yokozuna from WrestleMania 10. Now, it's funny because we both give that show such a high grade, and then I don't think you ever see this on a major show where both they have two world title matches. They both suck, but the show's so great. But Yoko's pretty gassed by that point. Bret had just had an epic match, and you could tell kind of they just wanted to get out there and get it done. Piper was the ref, didn't really add much as well, other than doing that weird thing where he almost shook the ropes but didn't. And Yoko fell. And really, the highlight of this match was the post match when Bret was celebrating. And Owen, I think we talked about this last night in the part one, but where Owen was seething after the match, and all the other wrestlers came and paraded Bret around on the shoulders. So,
yeah, I actually have this match slightly higher, a little bit higher, not much higher. My number 33 match is Edge, John Cena, and the Big Show World Heavyweight Title from WrestleMania 25. Simply because I don't even remember the storyline. What were they fighting about? Was this
over
throwing...
Vicky with
With Cena's Vicky Barbs and I don't.
Yeah, but remember, like, Show kind of liked her and she was like kind of leading Show on, and then she ended up didn't she end up with Show? She ended up turning on Edge, I think, eventually, and she ended up managing Show. It was something weird like that. Show,
yeah,
was
just,
it was some weird like love triangle with them.
Yeah, I don't remember it. I thought it was dumb. And I the match, I don't remember really liking that much. It was another easy Cena win, I think, you know, as usual.
It was more about the surprise. I remember everyone wondering, what are they going to do with Cena? Because Triple H and Orton were clearly going to be fighting for the WWE title.
Right.
And everyone kind of wondering how Cena was going to get involved.
Yeah. So I don't remember liking this match that much, just because I thought the storyline was stupid. And I just didn't like it at all. I feel like they slapped it together because they were focusing on the whole Orton, Triple H, and the McMahon family and all that kind of crap. So I have this match that low because I didn't like it. I thought the storyline was bad, and I think it just wasn't well executed.
All right, I have that one actually a little higher. So, okay. All right, number 32. Yeah, that'll be with the numbers.
Yeah, 32.
Is Undertaker versus Sid from WrestleMania 13.
That's what I have at 32 as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could have hotshotted things if they wanted to and put the title on Bret, you know, in that cage match that they ended up having on Raw. Of course, the first big Raw, where they, you know, right after they expanded with the Titantron and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that great cage match between Bret and Sid where Taker and Steve were fighting them off and from the outside of the cage and everything. But, you know, they wanted to give Taker the win. He deserved a run. And his run in 97 ends up being pretty good, his title run. Mm-hmm. This gets off to kind of a boring start, especially coming off that Bret-Steve match and even the Nation of Domination LOD Ahmed street fight. Like, those are two pretty good matches to lead into this. And really the highlight was just Sean on commentary and Bret basically kind of starting his heel turn by interfering a couple times.
Yeah, three times total, actually. I hate this match. And you know me, I'm sure Gladiator on our board is going to call me, go ahead, defend your guy, Sid. But this match is just not good. And then there's, of course, the urban legend that Sid shit his pants halfway through.
No, you know, I was just about to bring that up. That was not this match. I'm pretty sure that did happen, but I think it was like a match in 91 when they first were feuding. I'm pretty
really
sure.
Really? Yes. See, people get so confused about that. I never even realized they were in the people were talking about the wrong year.
Yeah, I don't think it was this match at all. I'm pretty sure that it was a show in 91. I don't think Sid shit his pants at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Bret almost kind of messed the match up in some ways. Because it just got so herky jerky, and Sean's commentary is hilarious. Every time Bret comes out, he goes, "Jesus Christ!" That's so funny. But the match itself is just not good.
I mean, the main event scene in early '97 was really hot because for the first time, you had like five or six guys fighting for the title all of a sudden as legit players instead of having one guy dominate. And that was the first time they had that in a long time. And so it's funny because I remember being really anticipating this match, and then it's one of those matches that it finally gets going. You're like, oh, all right. You know, yeah, it couldn't live up to the build no matter what.
No, it didn't. So we both have that at 32. So 31.
A match that I was really looking forward to at the time, and it really disappointed me. I think the result was wrong. I think they should have had a different result, and that is WrestleMania 21, John Cena and JBL. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone wanted the crazy bloodbath war that we got at Judgment Day at that show. I understand why they couldn't do that in that spot at WrestleMania, but to me, this match should have been JBL getting DQ'd and holding on to his title. Cena could have waited another couple months. He ended up getting overshadowed anyway by a match later in the show. I would have had Cena get screwed here. JBL, the cabinet comes in, they all beat Cena down, gets DQ'd, and then at Judgment Day, JBL keeps pulling out all the stops, and Cena finally wins. I talked about this at great length in our review, but JBL's title reign deserves such a better ending. He had such a good title reign, a long title reign that pissed off a lot of people, and to have it end like this, with just a bland, like, 8-minute match buried, you know, below another world title match, just, I feel like he deserved better. And the Judgment Day match was that match. They should have just held off and made that the title change.
I have this match a little bit, actually I have it not a lot higher, but I have it higher. I have here at 31, I have a match you've already talked about, and that's Brett and Yoko from 10, for the same reasons you have it, but I like it a little bit better because I factor the ending with Owen on the ramp. I factor that in as the whole package. So I give it a little bit of a bump just for that reason alone. Okay. I actually have Cena and Cena and JBL a little bit higher because I did like the match itself. But we'll get to that when we get to it. But yeah, I have it 31. I have Brett and Yoko from 10.
Okay, so number 30. So. I have another match, once again, that had a lot of intrigue going into it, a pretty good build-up, and that's Triple H and Randy Orton from WrestleMania 25. It was a little hokey when Triple H broke into his house, but all the stuff with Orton, that was such a great, great segment. Orton DDT'd Stephanie right in front of Triple H. And Orton just was really, you know, kind of locked in as a heel here, and they just got burnt. Once again, Triple H gets hosed, just like he did at WrestleMania 18 by going on after a great, great legend match between Taker and Shawn. I think the crowd just really wasn't into it. And instead of making it the wild brawl it should have been, they went for a straight wrestling match. And the angle heading into this was that Triple H just wanted to kill Orton. And, you know, but then you have him here locking up and wrestling, you know, like he should have came out with a sledgehammer, you know, broke his fucking face off for everything Orton had done. And it just ended up being a really boring match. And there were a couple guys I know from the Blog of Doom. Actually, I think Andrew Reich is one of them that was at that show. And they were saying they were leaving during that match. I think he might have been one of the people that left during that match because they just hated it so much. It was just so boring to be witness to. So to me, if people are leaving WrestleMania during the main event, that tells you it's pretty awful.
Well, I have that match slightly higher, maybe just because it's Triple H. But my thing with that match, here's two things to add on to your comments. Number one, the reason they didn't make it a brawl is because the stipulation was if Triple H got counted out or DQ'd, he'd lose the title.
Well, they could have taken the stipulation off and had a good match instead.
I agree. I think it was more of trying to protect Orton. The problem is Orton was the one that should have had the belt going in, not Triple H. And number two, getting back to that, the build for this match is great because you're talking about when Orton DDT'd Stephanie. Don't forget, Triple H was handcuffed to the ropes.
Yep.
And then Orton kissed her.
That's right, yes.
Which made it even, which was great. But I had that match a little higher, probably because, you know, it's my guy and it's a main event. My number 30 match, actually, same two guys from my 31 just a year earlier, and that's Brett and Yoko from WrestleMania 9. Mm-hmm. Not better than their match at 10. Not that much better, but better. And, you know, Brett was a little greener, but Yoko was too. So it was almost like they were on the same level. And I thought it was a lot more action. I thought the crowd was a little more into it. And and I give that a little notch above the match at WrestleMania 10.
Okay. So my next one.
29
is a cage match from WrestleMania 2. And that's Hulk Hogan versus King Kong Bundy. Good match. But just to me doesn't scream WrestleMania title match. I don't think Bundy had the heat that they were looking for. To me, this is a one-spot match, and that is, besides the blood that pops up, which is pretty good, is that awesome power slam that Hogan gives him. Outside of that, to me, there's really nothing else going on here.
Yeah, I am actually, I might as well just say it, I have that one notch up. I have that at 28.
So why don't you talk about that first, and then...
Yeah, don't forget, the rumors were back then that Vince was trying to get Nikita Koloff to be the big heel, which would have been fucking awesome.
Yes.
I said this in our... Starcade 85 written review on the Place to Be message board, instead of Bundy with the five splashes and the five avalanches in that Saturday Night's Main Event in Phoenix, could you imagine if like Ivan Koloff came in and or Nikolai or something and held him down while Nikita beat him with a chain? I mean, that would have been crazy.
Yeah, it definitely would.
But you know, alas, you know, and you and I have kind of softened on the match a little bit over time. It doesn't deserve to be higher than it is.
No,
but it's not as crappy as people made it out to be. But in the pantheon of the world title matches, it doesn't deserve to be any higher.
Well, it's just, it didn't have much intrigue behind it either. I mean, I wasn't a fan at the time, but did it really seem like Bundy was going to win the title?
No, not really. No. Yeah. I mean, the build was good. I remember getting a little nervous with the taped ribs and that kind of thing. And it was, but I think in the end, we all knew that Hogan was going to probably come away with it. My number 29 match is another match that I was not really nuts about the build. I like both guys, but I was not really crazy about the build going into the match. And the match itself kind of bored me. And that was John Cena and Batista from last year, WrestleMania 26. Not a bad match, but I don't know. I didn't like the build. It was kind of flat. I'm not really crazy about Batista as the heel. If he was a nasty, like, Evolution heel. Instead, he reminded me a lot of Sid from 1995. Just, he shouldn't have been a chicken shit. He doesn't play it off very well. Sid didn't either. And being Vince's bitch, and I don't know, I didn't like it. I didn't like the build at all. I didn't like the way it was laid out at all. And the match, I think, reflected that. So, and it was another easy Cena win, and we all obviously can't stand any of those. So, this match could have been a lot better if maybe it was they were two baby faces or something else. But that I didn't like the build. I didn't like the Batista being a chicken shit. Didn't fit. Just like it didn't fit Sid in 95. So that's why I have that match kind of low.
Okay, so now my number 28, where you had Hogan and Bundy, mm-hmm. I have Batista Triple H from 21. Another match where the build was so great, and the slow build to Batista's face turn was so well done. You know, this was originally supposed to be Orton Triple H, but the fans pretty much forced them into Batista because he had been built as just kind of this cool heel that finally, you know, turned on Triple H. But the match was just so heatless and just so plodding. I don't know. This is another match that could have been more suited to doing that brawling style that had been so prevalent during the Attitude Era. Instead of what it was, you know, Triple H just had this, you know, I want to change my performance list, actually. I think I'm going to take him off and put Hogan on, to be honest with you. Because a lot of his WrestleMania matches, where he has to carry them, just end up being kind of plodding because he wants to get all his offense in. And he thinks he can kind of build this, like, epic, you know, big-time match feel, and he just comes up short. So I am editing this. All the people got really mad at me earlier in this podcast because I had him on the list. I am removing him for Hulk Hogan. But this match itself, Batista, the win is great, but the match itself is just, I don't know. Just to me, it just always kind of bored me.
Well, that's fine because you're all going to regret it when Taker's 18-1 on Monday morning. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, right. okay, so you have that. That's your 28.
Okay, so now my 27.
So now you need your 27, yep.
And that's a match you just talked about, and that's Bret Hart and Yoko from 9. I always liked this match. I thought Bret really wanted to make a point that he could carry a guy like Yoko to a good match, and he did. That was a really good match. I thought they worked hard. Yoko really, you know, hung with him. And according to Bret, there was actually supposed to be more to that match, but Yoko called an audible and shortened it because he was tiring. And Bret was kind of pissed because I guess he felt like it would tell an even better story. But I thought Bret did a good job here working this match. The atmosphere and the fans were into it, and I really wish Bret had just won this match and gotten the win and held the title. That would have made it even better. But just a solid, unexpectedly solid match.
Right, I agree. My number 27 match is another match where I don't even remember the storyline, to be honest with you, and that's Triple H versus Randy Orton versus John Cena from WrestleMania 24. Why were they feuding? I don't even remember.
Cena had just come back at the Rumble, blew his title match at No Way Out.
No Way Out, and Triple H won the chamber.
Yeah, and then Cena somehow goes away, shoehorned his way back in.
Shoehorned his way in. So, that, yeah. If that's the best they could do for a WrestleMania build, then I'll pass.
Okay.
And actually, I didn't like the match.
Actually, that match a little higher. We'll get to that, but.
Okay. This is one of those few matches where I, maybe I got bummed that I thought Triple H was going to win. He ends up winning it the next month at Backlash, but, yeah, not one of my favorites. Not one of my favorites.
All right, well, next up of mine is a match you just talked about, and I probably won't say much more about it, and that's Cena-Show Edge. Just kind of an innocuous match. Nothing really memorable about it, just kind of there. But those matches I tend to give a little more bump to just because, you know, I remember all three guys working pretty hard. They just didn't mesh. But it was solid enough, so.
And then I have at 26 a match you've already talked about, and that's Triple H and Orton from 25. Same reasons you did. I thought the stipulations were dumb. I certainly would not have walked out in the middle of it, damn them. But yeah, the build was really good, but I think it would have been better if Orton was the one that had the belt and not Triple H. I think it would have made it.
Oh, wow. I totally forgot Triple H was champion. I thought Orton
Triple H won the belt. He was the champion going in. So it would have been a lot better if Orton was the champion.
Yes.
And yeah, for brawling, taking out that stupid DQ countout stip probably would have made it a lot better. So.
Okay, so next up of mine, number
25.
Number 25, I have a match that gets a lot of shit, mainly because of the outcome, and that's Triple H Booker from 19. I always kind of like that match more than I think most of the public wrestling fans do. I know the build was a fucking mess with all the racist stuff. Triple H, you know, your people aren't meant to be world champion. Tell them to dance for him, and everyone thought Booker should have won. He probably should have, but you know, they wanted Triple H to have a lengthy reign going into the Goldberg loss later in the year. I know everyone always says, oh, he hits him with the pedigree and lays around for 2 minutes. It's really not that long. And if you actually watch the match, the whole crux of it is that Booker fucks his knee up. And when he does the pedigree, he lands on his knee. So he's really like in a lot of pain, and it's only like maybe, I don't know. I think I counted. It wasn't nearly as long.
It's like 30 seconds.
I don't think it's even that long. Yeah, I don't think it's. When you watch the flow of the match, it's actually not that bad. Everyone remembers it for that, but this match is better than it gets credit for. I think everyone just hates on it because it's Triple H 2003, but and just because of the way the feud went, Booker never really got you know, the win that he probably should have gotten. You kind of made it look stupid, but yeah. The match itself, I think, is fine.
I actually have that match a little higher. My match at number 25, I can't believe I just realized why, I don't know why I rated it this low, probably because I didn't like the booking of the match itself in the end, but I have Triple H, Rock, Foley, and Big Show from 16. I think a lot of people hate this match because they hated Triple H winning. I, of course, love Triple H winning, but it was a weird match in terms of the way it was laid out. I remember Big Show got knocked out, what, like 5 minutes in?
Yeah.
And then Mick lasted like, what, another maybe 15 minutes or maybe 10 minutes?
Yeah, he lasted a little bit longer.
And then it was essentially Triple H and Rock for about 19 minutes.
Yeah, they fight. It's a long match. So, I think it's almost like 40 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long match. I'll have to look it up on our board. Yeah, it just was laid out funny. And I'm being a fan, I was not upset at all that Triple H kept it. But objectively, I thought the match was laid out just a little strange. The Vince heel turn was kind of, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to say that it was predictable, but I couldn't possibly see Triple H, you know, staying or Vince staying champion.
That match was 36-28.
Yeah, 36-28. And let me see. Did I? I keep my screen keeps bouncing. I keep hitting the wrong one. And it has. Let me go through the, because I know that we lay out the I know that we lay out the pins in it. So let me see what the layout is. Rock pins Big Show with a rock bottom at 4:41. Triple H pins Foley with a pedigree at 19:41, and then Triple H pins Rock after two Vince chair shots at 36:28. So they wrestle for like another 17 minutes.
Right.
It's like so disjointed. I thought it could have been laid out a lot better. And obviously the crowd shat on it, but then again, it's Anaheim, and half of them probably left two matches ago. So, as much as I loved seeing Triple H win, and this was one of my major peak of being a fan of his, the match could have been a lot better and laid out a lot better.
All right.
So,
next up on my list now, I think you're gonna really shit on me. You're gonna get mad at me for this one.
All right. So this is number 24.
Okay, number 24. Now I just want to explain myself. This match, to me, would probably be bottom couple. And the only reason it's this high is because of the magnitude and the crowd. And that's Hogan Andre from 3. I know you're probably going to have that higher. To me, I have some sentimental value, probably not as much as you have it. The match itself just really is not very good at all, outside of the slam. You know, the atmosphere, the importance, to me, that bumps it from being down there with Hart and Yoko, Luger Yoko, to where I have it. So, you know, I am factoring that in, and that's what has it even here.
Okay. I do have it higher, much higher. Not as high as you think, but I do have it higher. This is where I have, and I might as well just say it, I have the two 21 title matches back-to-back.
Okay.
I have JBL Cena at 24, and I have Triple H Batista at 23. for the same reasons. Cena, JBL, I actually like the match as a standalone match. Obviously, Cena winning is kind of dumb, and we already documented that whole thing. And obviously, Triple H, Batista, the same reason. I think Triple H tried to make this super – and, you know, him and Dave are tight, so I think he wanted to give Batista a really good match. He tried his best, and it just didn't – again, it just didn't deliver as good as it could. Obviously, Backlash was a little bit better, and of course, you know, we all know about the Vengeance Cell match. It's one of my favorites of all time. It just didn't have that drama. And by then, I think the LA crowd was baked. So through their own fault or by the fault of the card. So they didn't really help it to gain any more sizzle. So you might as well skip ahead to 23. But I have the 221 matches back-to-back.
All right,
Cena,
so,
JBL at 24, and Triple H, Batista at 23.
Right, so my 23 is the match you just talked about, and that's the four-way from WrestleMania 16. You pretty much summed it up. You know, the only thing you didn't really mention was the McMahons in every corner. That kind of seems a little shoehorned in. You know, with Linda being in mixed corner, bringing him back out of retirement. I know a lot of people kind of shit on Foley. You know, he just retired, but I was actually fine with that. It's like, it's one more match, and they actually, you know, I thought he was going to win because the way they came up with the whole thing on TV saying, you know, if he wins, they're going to have a tournament. And I thought that's definitely what they wanted to do. And maybe they should have done that and just had Rock, Triple H be the finals of the tournament. But, you know, he got his WrestleMania main event finally. Show is just kind of in there just for the hell of it because, that was his best run at that point coming off that world title reign in 99. Still kind of a major player, just turned heel with Shane. So it was, it's a fine match, a little backwards. I'm not crazy about the heel winning. I get that it, you know, they wanted to add a little unpredictability to it. But just as a year later, I wasn't too crazy with Vince, you know, standing there being part of the finish. Same here. So then my number 22 match is another Triple H match, and that is him versus Jericho at 18. The match itself is fine. I like all the work Jericho does, the psychology of working on Triple H's leg. It's a good match, but just I can't get over the crowd heat, the lack of heat, and just the blah feeling. The storyline heading in was kind of a disaster. I thought Jericho deserved better. You know, Triple H was just out of shape at this point as far as in-ring shape. I mean, he was in ridiculously, you know, cut shape. But in the ring itself, it just was kind of gassed, I thought, because he was just came back too big from the injury. So right. He was a little rusty. So I thought Jericho did what he could to help, you know, kind of carry him through that match. But it was just they were lost before they even got out there.
I have that match obviously a little higher, not too much higher, but I have it a little higher. This match I have at 22. Could have been a lot better if they gave it more time. I feel this match got stunted, and that was Rey Mysterio versus Kurt Angle versus Randy Orton, World Heavyweight title from WrestleMania 22. The match is only 9 minutes long. I feel Kurt got stiffed here, and I could see why he started getting pissed off as 2006 progressed. I think he wanted to make this match better. Orton was a complete and utter douche on stage and backstage, and Kurt knew it. He probably didn't even want him in the match, but, you know, Orton was the golden boy at the time, and you really couldn't put him anywhere else. And I think that Orton just kind of blahed through the match, and it could have been a lot longer. So I definitely wish I could have ranked this higher if it had another 6 minutes.
Okay, all right. So now it's me in the middle part. Just pick up the pace a little bit on some of these. The next one here I have is Cena Batista. I like the build, actually. I thought they were going to involve Brett and Vince in this match. I know Vince was involved, but I thought they were going to make it like a tag or something like that. I liked the Batista heel run last year. I liked the whole wearing the sunglasses and just being a douche and calling out the fat chicks and everything else. I really liked this heel run, kind of contradicting your belief there. I like that. I thought the match itself was fine. I know a lot of people – it was a very divisive match, if I remember, actually. I thought some people really liked it and some people hated it. So I think we're just as split as the others are. So I rank that there.
Okay. My next match above that, another match that I didn't like the build. I know it was a ready-made build, but that's Edge and Jericho from last year, World Heavyweight title.
And actually, I have that next on mine. So
yeah, Edge as a face is better now. It's kind of like the same thing with Triple H in 2002. I don't think anybody was quite ready for it yet. So they kind of forced the face turn, realized it didn't work, and then just turned him heel. And now he's a face because the fans made him a face.
And plus, you wonder, too, how healthy he was in that match. Because remember, he kind of rushed back from that injury, and then he didn't really wrestle much on TV during that buildup.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely. It didn't come off as good as it should have.
I think why. It actually suffered a little bit, like Shawn and Perfect, the SummerSlam 93. There was a lot of hype for the match. I think you know, a lot of people thought it was going to be a really great, one of the best matches of the card. It ended up being pretty good, but I think the expectations were so high that people were disappointed with it.
Right.
Okay, so what is your match in that spot there that I have?
That's number, let's see, we're at number 20. I have a match that a lot of people crap on. I don't really hate it, but I can't see it higher than some other stuff I have here. And that's Edge and Taker from WrestleMania 24. Probably because if Edge had the streak going on, they could have really made this thing sexy. But they fucked it up by putting him in the Money in the Bank the year before. And the build to this was okay. I remember because this is when you and I used to write Raw and SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Or not write it, but review it. I wish we were writing it. and I remember the build going into this match was kind of bleh. It wasn't that good. I didn't like it. And the match just, I thought, came off flat.
Okay, so. I disagree with that greatly, actually. I have that a little bit higher. Okay. But I'll get to that when we get there. So next up on mine, so I guess number 19,
Let's see. Yes, 19.
Okay, a match you talked about earlier, and that's Orton Cena Triple H from 24. I like that match. I thought that they had a really good chemistry between the three of them. Kind of the big three stars of, you know, the late 2000s finally going into one match in a big spot. You know, it was cool that Orton won. I think that was a good little swerve. A lot of people, like you said, expect that Triple H should get the title. And, you know, Cena too, seeing him lose. That was kind of during that stretch where he was actually doing a lot of jobs. In 2008, he was having the feud with JBL where he ended up laying down a couple times too. So, yeah, I think that's just a solid WrestleMania. It didn't have to carry the show. It was in the middle. And is that the open where they had all the fake Cenas? Oh, no, that was the awesome marching band. That was another thing I remember about that match I liked a lot.
Yes,
when the marching band played his song down.
Yes, I remember that too. I did like that, actually. My number 19 match is a match that people gush over, and I just don't see it. I thought it was too forced, and that was Cena and Shawn from WrestleMania 23. Everybody loves this match, and I think it was one of those cases where Shawn was forced to be Shawn, and I felt it wasn't as natural as he normally is, and I think the match didn't come – I don't think it came off on TV as well as the match they had on Raw in England was. I thought it was too long. I thought there was 6 or 7 minutes in the middle that was just kind of – stalling to make it look like an epic match. Maybe I have to watch it again, but it's better than some of these matches we have below it, but a lot of people would have it higher than 19. I just can't put it higher. I can never get over the fact that it was too long. And I don't say that much about, I don't say that often about Shawn matches. Mm-hmm. That one could have been a lot shorter, I think.
Okay. Next up, I have a match, another one you've already talked about, and that's Mysterio, Angle Orton. To me, that was a lot of action that they got fucked, really, having to only get like 9 minutes. But I really thought they went balls to the wall. I don't think Orton dogged it really at all. I thought he worked pretty hard in that match, you know, considering that he was probably supposed to win the title at the show and ended up blowing it. But Angle really, you could tell he was pissed, I think, the position he was in. And he went out, you know, to make a point. And Ray always works well in those kind of matches. So I love the pacing of that match. This is nonstop action for 9 minutes.
Yeah, my let's see, that's number 17 for me. Number 18 is we're on match art we already talked about, and that's Triple H and Booker from 19. I like the match. Yeah, the storyline kind of sucked. I mean, Triple H was a douche, but whatever. I get over that quick. But the match I thought was very good, and as a standalone match, it really isn't bad. It's better than people think it is. I think you actually gave it pretty good praise, even though you have it lower than me. Mm-hmm. It really isn't a bad match. And the whole Triple H lying there for 9 minutes, I'm so fucking tired of that. You're right. It's like 25 seconds, maybe.
And it fits the story. It really does. If you watch that match, it flows.
Right. It does. It does. So I have that a little higher than you. I have it at 18. Right. It is tough to grade it higher, so I don't. But it is a better match than I think people give it credit for.
And that kind of goes along with my next match. It's, I think, kind of an underrated title match at number 17. That's from WrestleMania 7, Hulk Hogan and Sergeant Slaughter. I think this kind of gets shit on because a lot of people didn't like the Iraqi sympathizer storyline. I thought it was fine for what it was. I think this feud should have ended here and not dragged on through the summer. But this match, actually, they worked well together. Slaughter's offense was solid enough and believable enough that he could, you know, beat Hogan down. They hit him with the chair. You know, Hogan gets the win. I liked Regis on commentary. Yeah, just a fun, you know, title change to end that WrestleMania. That was fitting for that WrestleMania.
I actually have that a little higher, not that much higher, but I have a little higher. I have here is a match we've already talked about, and that's Triple H and Jericho from 18. It is disappointing. I think it is pretty hard. You know, while we're doing this list, it is kind of hard to be a Triple H fan because, you know, I absolutely love the guy. I really do.
We keep shitting on every match. But he's out of my top 10.
But he's you know, it is hard to dispute some of the matches. This one, again, it's not his fault. They both said on the WrestleMania DVD they didn't want to go after Hogan and Rock, but they tried to go old school with the title match being last, and, you know, now they don't seem to give a shit. And, you know, the match wasn't bad. I hate the storyline. And I blame Stephanie. I dump it on her. Because she's the one who wrote it. I feel bad because both Triple H and Jericho looked like idiots in this build. I don't think it had anything to do with him. I think it was her. But yeah, I like the match a lot. But yeah, it was in a bad spot in the show, and the storyline sucked.
All right. So next up is number 16.
Yep.
And that is I have here the tournament final from WrestleMania 4, Savage and DiBiase. Yeah, they've had better matches. They would go on to have better matches. I think Savage was just tired. And the storyline really dominates this with Hogan and Andre at ringside and everything, all the hoopla going around. And of course, Hogan ends up helping Savage win, which kind of taints the win a little bit, but it gets credit for starting the really great, you know, year long arc for Savage and Hogan, but good finish for that tournament. But to me, it's just a middle of the road title match.
Okay, my number 16 is a match that I used to like a lot, and I still do, and maybe if we did this countdown maybe 5 years ago, I would have it higher, and that's the first of the three, well, two of them were only title matches, but The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin from WrestleMania 15. Everyone thinks I like this match more than I should, and I do. I love the storyline. I think it's one of the best WrestleMania arcs ever written. From Breakdown 98 to this match. I know you don't like it because it's kind of predictable.
I actually have it higher than you, though.
Yeah, which is funny because you used to not like the fact that it was so predictable. But I don't think anybody cared it was predictable.
No, I mean, comparison to why I thought maybe it wasn't as good as the year before. I don't think it's a bad match.
Right. No, I don't either. I know you don't like Mick as ref, and anytime special refs are in main events, it always kind of muddies the water a little bit.
I just didn't like his count. No, I don't know.
His count was way too fast. Yes. And, you know, Tyson's at 14 wasn't that
annoyed me too.
That one annoyed me too. But I love the match. Rock and they're talking to each other. And I like the fact that JR came out for the end, so we don't have to listen to Cole do it. It's just one of my favorites.
Okay. All right. So next up on my list is Triple H Cena from 22. This match was, you know, good. I like this is another one people have a problem with the build up. They kind of look at it almost like the Booker, just without the racism, where Triple H kept saying Cena couldn't wrestle and everything else. And Cena was basically like, okay, yeah, you're right. I can't wrestle. You know, he was kind of like the dopey guy just kind of going along with it. But, this was right when Cena was just in that real, spot where he was just getting the shit booted out of him by pretty much everyone except for the kids and women, which, you know, it's kind of the same today, but not as glaring as it was at that point. But the crowd is just so awesome for that match. It's this very electric feeling. And of course, it was great seeing Triple H tap out, you know, to give Cena a win when a lot of people thought Triple H was just going to take his title back. So good match. I liked it a lot.
I have it actually much higher. I have a match at 15 that we've already talked about that you did, and that's Hogan and Slaughter from 7. The build is great. You know, when he burns the Hogan, I know they said they want to burn a flag, and Slaughter said no. And they burned the shirt, and, you know, Slaughter was legit, and, you know, Hogan kind of, it was the only storyline where you could tolerate Hogan winning the title again. And the match is really good. I mean, it's almost 20 minutes, and Slaughter gives him a good ride. I got to tell you, you know, as the Sarge doesn't get as much credit for this match as you and I do give him credit for. He really gave a good go for Hogan in this match, and I think it's definitely one of the more underrated title matches in WrestleMania history.
Yes, definitely.
So, we're at 14, sir.
So number 14, I have the match you just talked about, and that's Austin Rock from 15.
Okay.
You talked about my qualms. Mick is the ref, a little predictable, but still a fun brawl. I actually thought they topped it the month later at Backlash, though.
Mm-hmm. Here's a match that I know you're going to hate me for having this low, and it's only because I just like every match above it. I know you have this. You might have this match in your top five, and that's Savage and Flair from WrestleMania 8. I know you love this match, and I do too. I love the build, Flair with the doctored pictures of Stephanie, with Elizabeth, you know, next to the horse and sitting at the pool, feeding him strawberries and all that kind of bullshit. And Savage was back in a groove, and it would be a great reign for him as champion. And I guess I was kind of disappointed because I wanted to see the big naked picture of Elizabeth on the wall of the Hoosier Dome. But the match is tremendous. Perfect's such a dick in this match. He's like pulling Savage by the hair and throwing him around. And it was just such a good up and down, good guy, bad guy match. And I was happy Savage won. I know you definitely have this match higher, but I like it. It's fine. For me, it's fine in this slot at 14.
Okay. So now at 13, I have a match that you did talk about, and that's Taker Edge. I really think, like, this match got off to a slow start. The first few minutes are very slow, and I think a lot of people gave up on it. But that just builds into one of the best, I think, pure just like title matches in WrestleMania history, to be honest with you. They really just went out there and built a match that you didn't know if these guys could do without the gimmicks and weapons, and they did it. I think you need to watch that match again, honestly.
Okay.
And of course, the end is great when it starts to rain as Taker celebrates. Or maybe it was his entrance. I forget when it started raining. But, you know, the only thing that kind of hurt it for me was it was Cole and Coachman on commentary. That was right after Taz had quit, and he had offered to do WrestleMania, but they said no thanks. And right before Foley started commentating. So it's kind of during that dead spot when Coach was the color guy. So that hurt it a little bit. But I want you to watch that match again because I'm curious your thoughts to see it again because I think it's a lot better than it gets credit for.
I have no problem watching anything over again. You know us. So, my match at number, what number are we on? We are on number 13. I can't believe I thought you were going to have this match much lower just because you absolutely can't stand it anymore. But you actually have it higher than me, obviously. And that is, the Iron Man match from WrestleMania 12, Bret and Shawn. It is a hard match to watch. Any 1 hour match is a hard match to watch. And I think this match deserves a lot more credit because it was booked very well, as good as it could be, considering that they don't do much. But I give Jerry – watching the match recently, I had it on our classics.com while I was at work. And I give Vincent Lawler a lot of credit. They really kept the tension and the story going amidst the fact that it was so long. Right. So I think the match deserves a lot more credit. It's not the greatest match in the world in terms of entertainment. But it definitely deserves more credit than sometimes we give it credit for.
Okay. So. All right. So next on my list is
number 12.
This is where I have Cena Michaels. I really like the match. I think I factor in the atmosphere. I really love the look of Ford Field for that show. I like the build here. Of course, it was supposed to be Cena Triple H in the rematch from the year before, but Triple H got hurt, so they put Michaels in his spot. And to me, it was just a great pure build. It was just two guys. That were the best at the time, the two top talents, Mr. WrestleMania, Mr. Current WWE going at it. Does Cena have the chops to hang with Michaels? Can Michaels take the title from Cena, who had been unbeatable at that point? It's just a basic storyline and a really good match.
Okay. At number 12, I have a match you already mentioned, and that's the finals of the tournament from WrestleMania 4, Savage DiBiase. I love the story. I love... you know, Andre being DiBiase's muscle and then, you know, the whispering in Elizabeth's ear and then out comes Hogan and nobody really expected it. And I just loved all that histrionics around it. And the match is good. You got two good workers. I'm sure they had better matches on house shows throughout that year into the summer, heading into SummerSlam. But I really like the match a lot. It's definitely one that people need to watch more often and really get more appreciation for it.
Okay. Next, I have the Iron Man match here.
All right, yeah. So you don't have it at that much higher than I do. Okay.
No, and the same reasons as you. I like the commentary. It helps carry it. Yes, it was a little bland, but it was really technically great. I wish they had a couple pinfalls, but it makes sense why they didn't. You know, that they wanted to just have these two guys prove that they were the best and that it would take a lot to beat them. It led to a pretty good angle with Bret walking out, you know, pissed off that he was screwed. So, I mean, it deserves its ranking here. I think it's overrated by the fact that a lot of the WWE has always pushed it as like the greatest WrestleMania match, and I don't think it's close to that. But it's in that range, just not there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's that good either. This we're at slot number 11. This is where I have Hogan and Andre.
Wow.
The build is all that. This is one of those cases, and you know, maybe I'm giving myself creative license here, and please, if anybody disagrees with me. You got the message board, you got the Gmail, you have the Facebook, go ahead and slam me. I don't think work rate matters here. It's just the best main event ever put together. And actually, when I did the list of when we did our list of main events that we ended up not doing, I had this match number one. It's the greatest main event in the history of the business,
mm-hmm.
bar none. Is the match great? It's as good as it was going to be. And even if you were a young kid, you knew the match was not going to be technically sound. When you're a kid, you don't give a crap that the match isn't technically sound. And slamming Andre, and of course he says that he ripped every muscle in his back, and of course, you know, now Andre weighs 9,000 pounds and he died 5 minutes later. But the match just is so special.
He actually died before the match, and he had to do it Weekend of Bernie style, where he had to work it with him, you know.
Well, so now we've seen Andre had to carry Andre without Andre helping him. I understand now.
Yeah.
But no, it's just the whole package, and our man Uke doing the ring announcing, and Bobby with the white, you know, tuxedo, the white waiter's jacket. But it's just the greatest main event in the history of the business. Is it a top 10 match? No. But it's just a notch below for me.
All right. So next up on my list, I have Diesel versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 11.
Just want everyone to know, we're in the top 10 now.
Okay. So this is my top 10 match here. So Diesel Michaels.
Okay.
You know my feelings on 11. These two were great friends. They put on a great match. The only problem a lot of people had was they thought Michaels kind of got himself over to the point where, you know, he kind of needed to win this match because he was kind of making Diesel almost look bad. And they've both addressed that in interviews subsequently and were fine with it. But, you know, they had the Sid fallout. Sid ends up accidentally costing Shawn the match, and that leads to the next night. I'm giving you the night off, that great promo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just great, great stuff. And this was really the genesis that sparked Michaels, major face turn.
Right. I actually have that match much higher than you, and I'm surprised, actually. At number 10 for me, I have another Shawn match, and that is Shawn and Steve from WrestleMania 14. This is one of those matches I could just watch over and over again. I love the crowd. I love JR's and King's commentary. JR fires off my favorite line he ever does for a match, and that is, no one has ever outperformed Shawn Michaels in a big match situation. And folks, it don't get no bigger than this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. He doesn't. And Shawn, God bless that guy. As much as you, at that time, you wanted to punch him in the face, he gave his all for 20 minutes. and he probably wanted to, like, crawl under a rock and die the way his back was feeling. It's just a perfect package, and it kicks open the door of the Attitude Era.
Right.
So.
Okay, so my number 9 match is Undertaker and Batista from WrestleMania 23. They felt slighted that they were stuck in the middle of the show, went out there, you know, said they were going to bust their asses and prove everyone wrong, and they did that at a time when not a lot of people expected them to be able to do that. And they actually ended up getting some pretty crazy chemistry that started here, ran all through the rest of that year. And they put on like 5 or 6 great matches that year. And this is the first one. And there was no gimmicks, nothing. These two guys went out there and actually wrestled a great basic power match with no frills needed. So that's where I have that match.
Okay. Number 9, I have that match higher. Number 9, I have a match that you and I have very special sentimentality for. And that is the Triple Threat. For the World Heavyweight title from WrestleMania 20, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Chris Benoit. As much as we had Benoit's song in our head all the way on the train ride home, it is a great match. And the ending, it's the one time that and I can honestly say it, and I'm not kidding you, it is the one time that I was not rooting for Triple H to win the match. And you remember that moment. I almost felt like the whole when Shawn was out cold on the floor and Benoit had his back and Triple H started getting up and the whole crowd, I had the feeling like all 20,000 people were staring at me with that, like, you and your fucking favorite wrestler. And it turned out, fortunately, that Benoit had him tap out. But it's a great match. It's bloody. It's vicious. And it was a perfect ending to that show.
All right. So for my number 8, I have another match from that show, and that is Kurt Angle and Eddie Guerrero.
I have it there, too.
Okay. Yeah. Really good match. You know, I think it hurts a little that Eddie came in as champion and kind of retained it, kind of hurt that moment a little bit, but still a great match. Angle's heel turn heading into the match was great, where he came out with the red sweater on, slowly walked to the ring. Guerrero was handcuffed and he just beats the shit out of him, you know, leading into that. And of course, they had the cool spot at the end where Eddie loosened up his boot and Angle went to put on the ankle lock and Eddie's boot came off. And then they built on that at SummerSlam where Angle took the boot off and gave him the ankle lock. So just a really fun match.
Yeah. And that's where I have it too. And I agree with you on all counts. And then to make it even worse, he actually cheats to win. He puts him in the small package and then hooks his feet on the ropes. So
yes,
perfect.
Yep.
Touch.
Yeah. No, that's fit his character perfectly.
Yep. So yeah, same reasons that I have it at 8 too.
Okay. All right. So next up at 7, I have the match you just talked about, and that's Austin and Michaels. To me, just the importance of that match helps bump it. You know, the official passing of the torch, Shawn finally, you know, after all the dick move power plays he had pulled, he finally kind of karma kind of got him, you know, forced him out of the ring, and he has to lay down here for Austin. The Tyson stuff is just so great. And this match, really, when you factor in the pain Michaels was in and the limitations they had, you couldn't have asked for more than what they gave.
Yeah, my number seven match we've already talked about, and that's Triple H and Cena from 22. I actually love the match.
Yeah, you have that very high.
Yeah, I love the match. Hate the ending. Love the match. Triple H beat the shit out of him, and I still grit my teeth when he taps out. But that was one of the few times my markdom came back. But it's a great match. It really is. And Cena, after getting shit on that whole match by the crowd, stuck in it, didn't let it frazzle him, and put on a great match. So I give him just as much credit as I do Triple H for that match.
Okay. So next up on the list,
number six.
Number six. Here we go into the heavy hitters now.
That's right.
I have the Mega Powers exploding here at number six, and that is Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, the culmination of their feud from started a year before in the same arena. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, there's not much more you can say about this match, and we'll be getting into it soon in our podcast reviews. But you know, just this is one of Hogan's finest pieces of work, I think, on a big stage. Mm-hmm. Just a great story with Elizabeth getting thrown out, and Jesse was just so great at commentary here. And you know, Hogan kicks out of the big elbow, which is a pretty big surprise, and then gets the win.
And that
sick bump too, Savage takes on the when he gets thrown over the top rope.
Yes. I might as well jump ahead. I have that match at five, actually, at number five, actually. Number six, I have a match that I absolutely love for the same reason that you talked about it earlier, and that's Taker and Batista from 23. I love watching these two wrestle. They put on over the next 2 years from that year into 08, they put on like six pay-per-view matches, and they're really all very good. You know, they went in with a chip on their shoulder. Anytime you have two wrestlers, relatively decent, talented wrestlers, go in with a chip on their shoulder, usually you get a pretty good match.
Yes.
And they both went in thinking, why does Shawn and Cena get the – what's their storyline so much more special than ours is?
Right.
And the two went out and put on an awesome match. I actually like that match better than I like Shawn and Cena.
Yeah, I as well.
So – that's why I have that at six. And just to count it off at five, I have Savage and Hogan as well.
Okay. At five, I have Hogan Warrior, the Ultimate Challenge. My favorite WrestleMania, excellent match. Of course, they went, you know, the story is they rehearsed it a million times to get it right, and it paid off. You know, Hogan misses the leg drop, Warrior hits a splash, they hug right out of the cart. Hogan rides out as Warrior, celebrates with the title in front of 67,000. Just a tremendous, tremendous match.
Okay. So that's your number five?
Yeah.
Okay, so number four. I give you my five. Yep, so now you're four.
My four you talked about, and that's the Triple Threat, Benoit, Michaels, Triple H. Us being there live helped bump that up for me. Mm-hmm. Just remembering, you know, yelling tap for Benoit and all that. It was just great stuff. And I think that match has lost its luster amongst some fans as the years have gone on. They think it's a little too choppy. But I still like it. I think it's a great match.
Well, and also having Benoit in it, people want to take the high road, the moral high ground, and not like it anymore.
I think even before that, though, it was actually people were starting to turn on it a little bit.
My number four match, and I can't believe – I mean, I have no problem having it this high. I thought you'd have it higher, and that's Shawn and Diesel from 11.
Mm-hmm.
The match is tremendous. And for a show that I overall don't like very much, these two put on a great match. And you're right. I think Shawn almost overdid it.
Right.
And I don't think anybody cared. You know, the fans weren't as snarky as they'd be now. So I don't think it really affected anybody in that way. But, you know, Diesel would get completely dumped on, and for good reason, the rest of the year, because he put on one piece of shit match after another after this. But this match, he deserves a lot of credit. Him mm-hmm. and Shawn went out and really put it together very well.
Yeah, this was the end of his title reign as far as, like, delivering anything positive until the end of the year.
Right, exactly.
All right, so now we're hitting the top three.
Yep.
I might catch some shit for this, but I'm going to have this match third. I've made it clear my qualms with it, and that is Rock and Austin from WrestleMania 17.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a fun brawl. I just, when I watch it, I want to love it, and I just can't get past that. There's something missing for me. I don't know what it is. It's an epic setting, an epic storyline. The end, I just don't like with Vince. I like the Austin heel turn. I'm a fan of that, but I think it should have been the next night on Raw. I don't think it should have happened here. I don't like Vince standing there as they just destroyed Rock with the chair. The fact that Rock kicked out of all those moves plus a ridiculous amount of chair shots is kind of goofy anyway. The match obviously is great. We're nitpicking here, but I just a little slight something missing for me.
Okay. At my number three, I have a match that you probably have two or one, obviously, and that's Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar from 19.
I have it as number two.
Okay. I have actually Rock and Steve at number two. I could easily put this match at number one if Brock didn't try that retarded
Shooting Star Press.
Shooting Star Press. That was stupid. I don't know what he got in his head thinking he should
it
do.
It wasn't
that.
Him. Someone else suggested it. Now, I heard an interview with him recently. It was an older interview that was replayed, and I can't remember now. Someone kind of just suggested it, and then he kind of ended up doing it. And he actually hit it in practice before the match a few times.
Well, the problem I think there was, I think Kurt was too far away.
Yes, definitely.
And
he was gassed, too.
Yeah, and you don't blame Kurt for that. I mean, I don't think Kurt was expecting him to do that anyway. But overall, the match is tremendous, and it caps off one of the most surprisingly great WrestleManias of all time. And I think that's another reason why I like it more than than just the match itself.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
It was a great match. It's awesome. That's where a lot of people thought they were going to be ushering in a new main event style. To me, 19 was the official end of the Attitude Era, and you thought here, okay, we're done with the garbage brawls. Now we're going to have the mat-based amateur studs carrying the main events.
Exactly. So I have that at 3. And at number 2, I have Rock and Steve from 17. I absolutely gush over this match. The build, the building, the set, Heyman's commentary, his color commentary, the beating the goddamn crap out of each other. Vince in the ring doesn't really piss me off as much as it pisses you off. I guess I wouldn't mind the Steve heel turn at the next night. I don't think it would have hurt the match. It would have made the match better or worse, in my opinion. I just love watching the two wrestle. They're my two of my favorite guys. I just love watching them wrestle. And that match is just fantastic.
All right. So. Now I guess my number one is going to be pretty surprising here. And that is WrestleMania 8, Ric Flair and Randy Savage.
Wow. I am surprised.
A lot of sentimentality went into this pick. I can't say it's the best pure match on this list. I just love the storyline. I love these two. I love that Savage finally got the fuck out of Hogan's shadow. Got to have his own title reign, his own title win. He had such an emotional run from his, the year earlier losing to Warrior. Such an emotional match. And then his whole feud with Jake was so great. And it just culminates here with Flair. I'd been fucking with him, mind fucking him all this time. Perfect keeps getting in the ring. Keeps acting like a dick the whole match. Savage, gets the win, rolls up Flair. Flair flips out, kisses Elizabeth. Savage flips out, beats the shit out of him. And there's just so much going on. And I love that show. I love that look to that arena. Flair and was great. Heenan was awesome on commentary, freaking out that whole match. Just great stuff. To me, that's like the epitome of just a classic pro wrestling match.
Well, obviously, since I haven't mentioned it yet myself, my number one world title match of all time is indeed the Ultimate Challenge, Hogan and Warrior from 6. Because, quite frankly, who would have expected two guys who have a combined 11 moves? I mean, their moveset is like a third of Kurt Angle's, and they put on a 5-star match.
Yep.
It's just mind-boggling. And the build, Jesse, pretty much the same reasons you like the match from 8. Jesse and Gorilla's commentary, that fucking huge Sky Dome crowd, the entrances, Jesse just so analytical about it, and just all the back and forth, and the Greco-Roman knuckle lock, and then almost freaking out when Hogan's knees shot, and then, Gorilla somehow says that his kneecap miraculously snapped back into place. it's just the perfect main event. It's a perfect main event.
Okay, and I do want to give out 3 quick shout-outs to matches that weren't for titles, but really could have cracked the top 5 on this list, probably. And that's Warrior Savage from 7, and then the two Taker-Shawn matches, 25 and 26.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, the only reason we didn't mention these matches is because we didn't have lists categorizing those matches.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they weren't great. We just didn't – there was nowhere to put them because they weren't title matches or main events or
– And obviously Big Boss Man and Akeem from WrestleMania 6 as well.
Well, duh. I mean, and then, of course – Jake the Snake and George Wells.
Yeah, obviously. Okay, so our last bit of business here is to rank the Manias. And actually, we're kind of running up on time. I don't want this to go too long. So I don't think we should even really talk about the show. Let's just read off our list and then kind of leave it up for debate. And then maybe we can revisit this at a later show.
Sure.
Sometime. So I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Unless we have a big disparity, then maybe we can talk about it. But some of these early ones, let's just say it. So the worst Mania to me is 2.
9.
Okay, I have 9 as the second worst, 25th.
I have 2. I have 2 as 25th.
So pretty much arguably the 2 worst shows.
Yep.
24th, I know we're going to differ on this one. I have 1 there.
I have 13.
Okay. I have 11, 23rd.
25.
And it's funny because I really love that show, but objectively I know where it should rank, 11. I think everyone worked hard on that show. I think they did what they could with the card.
I agree. I have it next. I have it at 22.
Okay, 22, I have 13.
Okay. 21 at number 21. I have last year.
Okay. Wow. All right. It's pretty low. Actually, I lied. I have it in the same spot. I thought that was something else. I was looking at.
Okay.
There, so.
Okay.
No, wait. I lied. I don't have it there. I suck at Roman numerals. 21, I have.
I just wrote the numbers normal. I was going to try and confuse myself.
I have WrestleMania 16 at 21.
Okay. I have 26 at 21.
Okay.
So at number 20? Yeah. At number 20, I have 12.
Okay. I have 25 there.
Okay. Number 19, I have 4.
I have 15 there.
Okay. Number 18, I have 22.
I have 12 there.
Okay. Then I have 15.
24.
Okay. I have 24.
All right. 16, I have WrestleMania 4.
Okay. At number 15,
I'm just really like, we should have done this separately because no one's going to be able to keep track of what the fuck we're saying.
maybe we'll do the years. We'll make that easier. At number 15, I have 2000.
15, I have 22.
Okay. Number 14, I have 2007.
14, I have last year's.
Okay. At number 13, I have 1991.
I have 23, so 2007s.
Okay. At number 12, I have 1998.
12, I have WrestleMania 18, Hogan Rock.
Okay. Number 11, I have 2005.
11, I have WrestleMania 5, Mega Powers Explode.
Okay. At number 10, now the top 10. At number 10, I have 1992, WrestleMania 8.
All right, 10 is where I have 21 from 2005.
Okay.
And really, that's a card that gets fucked by its second half. That really should be a lot higher.
WrestleMania 21?
Yeah.
Well, I have it at 11, so right. We have it fairly high anyway.
But I'm saying it could have been like top five with a better second half.
Yeah, exactly. Number 9, I have WrestleMania 18, 2002.
I have 7 there.
Okay. Number 8, I have 1989, WrestleMania 5.
I have WrestleMania 14 there, so we actually have that a lot higher than you had it.
Yeah, which is weird because I love that show too. I didn't think you liked it as much. At number 7, I have the first one, WrestleMania 1.
So, okay, that's another one. Obviously, we have a big...
Well, that one's different because we all know that I love that match for nostalgic purposes. Yes. It's the first show.
Number 7, I have WrestleMania 20.
Okay. At number 6, I have WrestleMania 20.
6 is where I have WrestleMania 8. Obviously carried by 2 matches, but to me, those 2 matches are so great that it propels the show that high.
Right. All right, the top 5. Our top 5. At number 5, I have WrestleMania 10.
All right, let the fireworks begin. At number 5, I have WrestleMania 3.
You and Andrew Reese should go buy furniture.
Get out of here. I believe the next 4 are better than that.
Live in a condo in Santa Monica or something. Ugh. God, you two kill me. Number 4, I have WrestleMania 19.
Number 4, I have WrestleMania 10.
Okay. Number 3, I have WrestleMania 6.
Number 3, I have WrestleMania 19.
Number 2, I have WrestleMania 17.
And that is where I have number 17 as well, number 2.
And at number 1, I have WrestleMania 3.
And I have 6. Now, I think our number 1s both are indicative of favoritism just towards the shows that we hold a special fondness for. They right. both have a big-time main event, big-time arena, big-time build. I honestly think 10, 19... 10 is arguable, but when you look at the card itself, I mean, you have 2 5-star matches.
I know,
three,
really.
It doesn't have that.
I agree with that. But 3 was just the cornerstone show.
Yeah, but 10 was just as important. I mean, really, it was the first post-Hogan New Generation show. The 10th anniversary coming back to MSG. I think it's just as important.
I do agree. The problem is by the end of 94, no one remembers it. The show, the product then hit the toilet, and except for you and 5 other people liking 19.
Well, there was also a lot more product at that point, too.
I agree with that. But WrestleMania 3 is just the cornerstone show of the Federation years. And, it's good enough to have gotten its own DVD. When WrestleMania 8 gets its own DVD. No, I'm only kidding. I know.
I don't have 8 higher than that.
But no, I know. But
I do have 19 higher because I think 19 just has a tremendous amount of great, great matches. And there's just so many. They have like 4 to 5 like tremendous WrestleMania matches.
Well, the thing about 19 and 10 is 19 and 10 almost go in the same category because both of them came out of nowhere. Do we really think WrestleMania 19 was going to be that good going in?
No.
But
they delivered. Didn't. They delivered.
They delivered big time. Same thing with 10. WrestleMania 6 is WrestleMania 6. It's the ultimate challenge. That card sucks, though.
So. If you look at it on paper,
the card's not very good.
If I had to objectively say number 1, I think I'd go with 17. I think 19 actually gives 17 a run for its money, though. To me, those are 2 and like tied for second because, 17... gets a lot of love, but 19 match for match kind of gives it a run for its money.
Right. I agree. So there's our list. We may post it somewhere. On one of our
probably on our board, I think.
Yeah, I'll post it on the board, bigelow34.proboards.com, and take a look at it. We apologize. It was kind of hard to try and say it clearly without confusing
you. We wish we could have gone more detail, but we wanted to just, maybe next time we do this, we'll cut back on the number of categories. But yeah. I do want to come back and do this for SummerSlam. I think we should do it for the major pay-per-views.
I was actually going to give you that idea. Maybe we should cut back on the, we don't need to care about SummerSlam openers. Maybe we should just do title matches.
Yeah. And so there'll be no celebrities for SummerSlam either, so.
Yeah, there weren't that many anyway.
All right, I just wanted to quickly hit some feedback before we go.
Yes,
yeah, we've kind of avoided it the last two shows.
Yeah,
this is from Facebook, our buddy from across the pond, Karen Polland, talking about our Survivor Series 87 review.
The Hot Scott.
Yes, or the Hot Rod.
The Hot Rod.
he says, like Justin mentioned, Survivor Series 87 is an underrated show, which is surprising considering it's the first one of the Big Four. The opening match is a fun way to start the show, and you could tell Vince wanted Savage, Steamboat, Jake to be the three faces of the IC title division until Steamboat ended up getting punished and Savage got pushed to the main event. The women's match isn't too bad and is highlighted by the Bomb Angels and Glamour Girls exchange at the end. The tag title match is a classic, and aside from the anthology, there's no other DVD out there that has it except for the UK Tag Classics. On the Tag Classics version, the Bulldogs elimination is also cut out. It's a blink and you'll miss it clip. The main event is tremendous. It really got Bigelow over, the wrestler, not me, obviously. Both of you mentioned as to why Bigelow got deep pushed and apparently suffered a knee injury as well, which is why his WrestleMania 4 match is so short. I agree that Hogan bitching and moaning after getting eliminated is annoying, but I have no problem with him celebrating after.
Okay.
Okay, we also have some, we just got a comment today from Jeremy on our Podbean website. And he said, hey guys, love your podcast. While listening to this podcast, WrestleMania 1, I noticed you mentioned Stu Hart was compensated greatly by Vince for purchasing Stampede. Turns out, actually, Vince never paid Stu at all. If you read Bret Hart's book, Vince didn't pay Stu for Stampede, having promised him money to be collected over the years equaling out the agreed sum for Stampede. After 4 or 5 years, Vince hadn't paid, so Stu opened the company back up, and that's where Owen and Pillman, guys like that, began working. It even had Vince coming back in against the Stampede shows in the late 80s. I actually did remember that. I'm not sure why I didn't mention it. Bret does talk about that quite a bit in his book.
I haven't read Bret's book yet, so I don't
and know. I think Bruce had a role in that, too, where he ended up starting to back up in Vince's face, and you know everyone was kind of worried, and then Stu, everything was kind of fine. Vince just didn't really give a shit at that point.
Well, that's if you watch the Heart and Soul DVD about the Heart family, that they do glaze over the fact that that the family, you know, like Bret and Pillman and Bulldog all got, you know, pushed to the big time, and Bruce kind of got left behind, and he got pissed off, and that's why he restarted, you know.
And he did think he was going to have an office job as well. He thought that was part of the deal, and then Vince kind of stiffed him.
Yeah.
Just two quick one-line comments, but these are really, really great comments, and I let both of these guys know how flattering these are. First is on the our brethren at the CWO Blog of Doom Facebook page. William Aaron Kenny let us said that your guys' podcast is awesome and it makes me want to make mine better. So, William, that is a great compliment that you have a podcast as well and that we kind of push you to help improve yours. And
yes,
it's feedback like this that keeps us going. And the guys over at CWO and Blog of Doom have been really, really supportive. And, you know, it goes beyond Andrew Reach and Jordan appearing on the show. A lot of those guys give great feedback. So, you know, thank you. And the more you post, we'll definitely shout you out in here. And yeah, I've always given the open invitation to those guys as well. Any of them are welcome to come on and chat with us. So
absolutely. And you know what? And for those that know the Blog of Doom, they are not easy guys to impress. they are tough cookies, and rightfully so. They know their stuff. And yes, thank you very much. We work very hard, and even at this late hour, we do our best to keep you entertained. So
and we have actually one more from the blog. This is from the blog itself, from Poster Overcommitter. Said, I'm really digging these podcasts because I do music all day at work. I listen to nothing but pods in my commute. Thank you for keeping them going. And thank you for listening, guys. Thank you for your feedback. Keep it coming because we like reading it. We do like getting your shout-outs on there. So hit us up on Facebook, the message board, and the Podbean site. But we're going to go ahead and wrap this up because I think we have been going a little longer than we expected, probably. There we go. We're going to close with one of our favorite Mania songs. So we just want to thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed this Listomania. We're going to be back. We're going to have our Royal Rumble 88 review coming up. We're also going to do our MLB, American League, National League previews as well. So try and get back to some sports talk and maybe another headline show as well coming up in the next couple of weeks. So for Scott Criscolo, I'm Justin Rosero, and thanks for listening.
Peace.